Hey everybody, we're back for another Bald Move Commission podcast, the last in our Christmas presents series. This was commissioned by Kristen for her husband Chris. They're big fans of the BB series, Black BBC series.
The Bieber series, yeah.
The Bieber, Justin Bieber series, Black Mirror.
Mm-hmm.
That's actually him and Justin Timberlake. It's a mashup of the Black album and you know, it's like You're My Mirror and I don't know. I lost the handle on that joke as I was through it. But that's what it's about. And it's the entirety of season one, which when I first saw this commission, I'm like, whoa, ho, ho, that's a little too much media. But season one's only three episodes.
Yeah. I think the real danger here is too much podcast for a single commission.
That might be because until a month ago, I had never seen any Black Mirror. I came home from, what was it? It might have been I came home from a Walking Dead live watch, and Cecily was watching the first episode of season three.
Okay.
I'm like, what the fuck? And I've watched another one in season three since then. But I wasn't, and this is the thing, because everyone says, like, oh, it's like Twilight Zone. And I'm like, I don't give a shit about Twilight Zone. This is more of like realistic-ish what ifs about future problems that we have. Mm-hmm. How do technology and the intersection of technology and humanity, as far as I can tell, fuck with our concepts of justice and consequences and family ties and all kinds of different things.
Yeah, and it's also very satirical at times. You know, it's not meant to be taken entirely seriously, and there's a lot of comedy in there just under the surface.
Yep.
Which this first episode is a prime example of, but it raises a lot of interesting questions in the same way that I think Twilight Zone did in its day, except maybe a little more abstract.
So we're going to do this as a three-part podcast, but literally this podcast will be assembled from these three episodes, and we're going to take them like mm-hmm. in kind of chronological order, because I'm essentially watching an episode and thinking about it and then recording a podcast, and we're just going to keep adding to it. So, like, I've only seen this first episode. It's called The National Anthem. There will be spoilers for all of season one of Black Mirror. I noticed that Netflix has season one. If you're a member, you can stream that. You actually already have the ability to stream it. So it's probably available any other place. I think it's well, you know, judging from the three episodes I've seen, it's if you're into technology, if you're into good television, if you want your mind blown or stretched out a little bit, it's decent television.
But yeah, I've seen all of seasons one and two, including the White Christmas, the Christmas special they did with John Hamm. I can tell you that, you know, if you watch this first one that we're about to talk about and you don't think it's maybe for you, stick around, because this is, in my opinion, one of the worst.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow. Okay. Cecily said the same thing, and I was this thing got under my fucking skin. My blood was boiling throughout the whole thing. We're about to get into major spoilers.
Okay.
I looked at Chris and Kristen's comments. I feel like single-handedly I'm going to cover every single one all by myself, let alone with what you bring to the table. So I won't be reading them.
Okay.
But we're about to get spoilery. Setup is National Anthem. The Prime Minister is awoken from his security team, and they say they have a disturbing video to show him, and one of the very popular princess, think Kate Middleton, I guess, has...
Yeah, think Princess Di, that sort of thing.
With a young husband that just got married, has been kidnapped by some unknown terrorist force, and the demand is that the Prime Minister, through some very demanding rules, do a live television performance later that afternoon at 4 p.m. of fucking a pig.
Yeah. That's the setup.
Which is interesting. Now, how much of this is about the whole flap of David Cameron? I think actually fucking a pig is some kind of college hazing incident.
Oh, right. Yeah, I forgot all about that.
Or, like, I'm wondering if this... Which was the chicken? I don't know enough about British culture. And also, I'm speaking of this as an American. I don't know. I'm not going to comment or judge, like, British reaction or politics. And I'm not going to say that, like, this is the way British people would react. This is just the way the television show.
Sure.
And I know some conservatives have find this hard to believe, but as a liberal, I'm also, like, a hugely patriotic person. And the idea that someone would fucking have our president, I don't care if it's Trump, Hillary, Obama, or Abraham Lincoln, to fuck a pig on live television is unconscionable. And not only would I expect them to not cave to that demand, if they did cave to that demand and it was like broadcast live in a bar, I would start fucking fights to disable the television, because I just was utterly appalled at how they showed the reaction to the citizens, like gleeful that this was about to take place.
Sure.
Like my blood was fucking boiling full time from beginning to end of this episode. I was pissed at the terrorist. I was pissed at the way his cabinet members behaved. I was pissed at the attitude of the population. Mm-hmm.
Well, it's
everyone but the pig, who, as far as I can tell, is blameless in all this, earned my ire.
Okay.
The fucking journalist? God damn the journalist.
Journalist. Hmm. Journalists are usually the worst. So it's interesting that they almost put the public up against itself here in what it wants more. Does it want the life of this princess saved, mm-hmm. which absolutely they do. They take their royalty very seriously over there.
Sure.
Or do they want to see this crazy thing happen? And I think they're torn as an audience. They don't know necessarily what they want, because they think what they want is to see this crazy thing happen. This PM
which also
fuck
saves,
a pig.
Which also saves the princess. So it's like, I don't think they're in right. conflict, I think.
Well, but then at the end of it, they clearly have a change of heart. I mean, you look at the people in that bar, and they don't realize that what they think they want to see is what they actually don't want to see. Hmm. It's the one thing they would rather not have happen.
Yeah, and I was just in disbelief that, and I think the episode would have been stronger if they showed more of a mixed reaction than like universal. Mm-hmm. And they did this all thing where they had instant polling, and it seemed like by a wide margin people were like, no, our prime minister should absolutely not cave to this demand and fuck a pig.
Right.
And then he an unauthorized side op from one of his deputies. It was revealed that they were trying to stage a stunt cock, I guess, and do some digital trickery to make it seem like he was fucking a pig and not really fuck the pig, which I'm like, that's weird from a, like, what are you going to do? Secure the princess safety and be like, haha, we fucking tricked you. The whole reason you don't cave the terrorists is so they don't do this shit again. If
sure.
you cave right. into them, then it just seems like you're going to have a cavalcade of this kind of, it's like, next it's going to be like, they'll have the queen go down on all of her corgis.
Right. You're asking for it. For sure.
Right. And I appreciated a lot of the political angle, like the prime minister, like we don't have this thing where the head of state, like we don't have like a figurehead and the person with actual authority, yet the figurehead also wields a great amount of cultural.
Yeah.
And like, soft political power. Like I like the fact that the queen essentially called him and said, "Oh, I expect you to fuck that pig." Mm-hmm. I like that aspect of it. I guess it would be like right. if, I don't know, Speaker of the House was supposed to fuck a pig and the president called and weighed in.
Yeah, it'd be like the president was supposed to fuck a pig and like, I don't know. Oprah calls him up and says, "Fuck that pig."
Beyonce
calls
the Queen
him up
of America
and says,
calls
that
up
pig.
And
yeah,
they stole Blue Ivy, and
I want you to
and,
fuck
and
that
Obama's
pig.
Obama's
got to
fuck the pig, and Beyonce's like, "You better fuck that pig." And Jay-Z's like, "Yeah, you know." And that's he's got to do it. Would you fuck a pig to save a person's life on camera?
Oh, sure. Yeah, why not?
Private citizen A. Ron Hubbard would fuck a pig to save a life.
Sounds doable, yeah.
If I was the dog catcher for bumfuck Kentucky, mm-hmm. I would absolutely not, because there is no – I don't care how much or how little power, if you're a government figure, you just can't fucking – I mean, it's like you either have national pride or you don't.
Uh-huh.
And if you have national pride, then it's unconscionable to have any public figure fucking a pig on live television.
That is true, certainly.
And as private citizen Aaron Hubbard, I'd expect the fucking national government to have my back. Like, I'm fucking this pig with the full understanding that the full faith, credit, and military might of my country is going to go into retribution to these assholes.
Well, you gotta find them.
As payment for my selfless
act.
Find them. Oh, you can find them. They drove Obama or Obama. Ooh. They drove Osama from his cave and drug him out of his villa and shot him. There's no fucking way they're going to let this pig fucker get away.
They knew who they were looking for, though. You don't even know who you're looking for here.
The other thing I thought was that got my blood boiling is when he gets there and you realize that you it's not just fucking a pig for a whatever mind. You got to fuck it to completion.
To completion. That is the part that I couldn't do.
I'm like, it's impossible. I can't guarantee that I can bust a nut inside a pig.
I can almost guarantee that I won't.
Yeah.
I can't.
Because not only is it the... I don't know that I could bust a nut in my fiance if I knew that, like, literally the whole world was watching this live on television. Like,
right.
I think that's one of the unappreciated skill sets of the male porn star.
The president, apparently.
The prime minister, is that they can perform on command. Now,
right.
I mean, it's just got more pathetic. Like, they showed, it was like an hour-long marathon of him. You know, I think he took Viagra.
Yeah, he took some kind of pills, which I assume is Viagra.
And he's just pumping away at this pig and sobbing and throwing up and vomiting. It was actually a whole lot to take in.
There were some real actual consequences for this man, despite there not being actual political consequences for him.
Right.
And in fact, him, you know, being 3 points higher in all the polling the next year
you
and all that stuff.
You fuck a pig to save a princess and you only get 3 points?
Yeah.
Jesus, England.
There are easier ways to get 3 points, man.
I'm just like, you know, that's a very subtle swing in popular opinion. I get that he was an unpopular prime minister. And, you know, I guarantee there's a certain percentage of the American citizens that would want to see any given president or anybody fuck a pig. I mean, some people just want to watch the world burn, and then some people just hate their political opponents that much, but... Not me.
I guess I'm surprised that you liked it as much as you did, because I think, you know, the political stuff is there, but that's not the real thrust of this episode.
The real thrust
is about the internet and public opinion, and also, you know, the titular black mirrors, the screens that we're all looking at constantly, right?
Right.
Because, I mean, the end of this thing... we find out that not only did the president not have to do this because the terrorist released the princess 30 minutes before they even broadcast.
It turns out the terrorist was an acclaimed painter.
But right, this is all an art project.
Yeah.
And he's trying to prove the point that we are so busy, so involved in these screens that they're talking about and seeing the next crazy event that's going to happen that we don't pay attention to what's right in front of us, which is the princess has been released and you don't have to do any of this.
Well, so that's it. When I saw her walking alone on that Millennial Bridge or whatever the hell they call it, last scene being obliterated in Harry Potter, I was questioning, like, I don't care what is going on. I don't care if we're landing the first man on the surface of the sun, like if there's aliens invading and it's all in the news, or if the aliens are invading and fucking a pig that's fucking the president, there's going to be foot traffic on that bridge, right? At no point is the streets just denuded of traffic that nobody, like, that's the thing. Like, I think they took the premise too far, to where I no longer took it seriously.
Okay, well, I was going to say, yeah, I think you're overthinking it, and that the point is there to be made, and that, you know, this is a little tongue-in-cheek. It's a lot of satire.
I took it way too personal.
I did not find this
funny at all from the jump.
I can tell.
Yeah. I took this very seriously. I found it
pretty funny and pretty ridiculous. And, you know, the points that it was making, yes, it was embellishing reality and the truth to do so, but I thought the points it's making are still valid. Mm. You know, it has taken them to their crazy logical conclusion, but that's kind of what this show does. And I don't know. I think it worked. I mean, it's an effective display.
I think it absolutely worked.
Our short attention spans and our lack of attention, really.
I don't know. I didn't think, to me, the premise itself was interesting. I didn't need the, you're spending too much time on your fucking cell phones and watching too much YouTube at the end, because I think that's a trite horseshit observation that took away from the power and simplicity of the plot itself. It's like,
okay,
what you want to shoehorn? It'd be like if an after school, like, okay, you know how in, like when He-Man and G.I. Joe, they would do like 30 minutes of brainless entertainment and then 30 seconds like a moral message.
Mm-hmm.
But then you also had after school specials. It's like, oh, you know, Jimmy's gay or Teresa's got AIDS or, you know, somebody's getting, you know, and it was like, that's the whole point. Like, it wasn't so much entertainment. It's all about like social commentary for today's youth. That's what it felt like. I felt like I watched an after school special and then He-Man came on 30 seconds and gave me moral at the end anyway.
Hmm.
It's like the whole fucking episode is a moral.
Uh-huh.
And that's what took it. Like, I profoundly did not like the artist statement at the end. Having the artist do it as an art project's fine, but releasing the princess early and being like, "Oh, if you weren't glued to your screens, you didn't have to fuck this pig." I'm like, no, I don't buy it. That premise has no regard to not only current popular culture and how the world works, but any conceivable like decades into a future version of that pop culture.
Why doesn't it have any insight into current culture?
Because I'm saying, like, I don't care what is going on in television, there will be people walking on that bridge. There would be there would be people that don't care. There'd be people like me that are like,
yeah, but it's not saying that no one actually noticed this. What it's trying to say is that the people,
I think that's exactly,
like,
the
most
point.
People don't notice it, and no one cares when it does happen. So, like,
but I don't believe that to be true.
Well, that 100% is true. I mean, look at all the shit that happens overseas that we just ignore as Americans, and the news largely ignores because we ignore it as Americans, and they're feeding us what we want to hear
or
what we want to see.
That seems like a good moral for a different episode, because that's not what the premise was. That's in downtown London and a very popular point that people would be so wrapped up in this pig fucking that no one had noticed the princess 30 minutes after she was released.
Again, I think you're overthinking it. I think you're taking the reality of it a little too seriously, whereas it's not meant to be reality. It's meant to state something, to make a statement. I mean, it is art. It's much like the art project that the artist was working on with this president and the pig fucking.
Right.
It's not like nobody's going to have a president fuck a pig, because why would they?
Uh-huh. Well, no, I don't know that that's actually true. Like, I'm actually...
No one's done it.
No one's done it, but
okay,
it's one of those things, like, maybe it would, you know... Tom Clancy wrote about planes being used to fly into government buildings as a form of terrorism 15 years before 9/11 happened.
Okay, like, so let's set the timer. 15 years from 2011.
Remind me, in 15 years, who's fucking a pig? To me, I guess, I don't think I'm missing the point. What I'm saying is I felt like that point was perpendicular to where the whole thrust of this episode was going, which is, you know, a new type of terrorism that it's not even really terrorism. It's maybe psychological terrorism. You know, it's not blowing people up. It's not dismembering people. It's very personal and focused.
Well, I mean, that's
and
what
it's using
terrorism
technology.
Is. Yeah,
but it's a new form.
Yeah, yeah.
Just
well,
the same.
Sure, I was thinking, like, just the power of public opinion and the ability for this kind of information to spread immediately and out of control of anyone who would
also
squash it.
A very strong point that this episode made. And what is the obligation of journalism?
Right.
And, like,
barely touched on. I mean, barely at all. There's one scene where they give it, like, a few seconds and basically just run with it.
Well, and, you know, they also had the thing, like, you really got someone that's like a secretary to a cabinet member that's going to sell out vital state secrets for a flash of boob? Like, what the? Like,
I don't know.
That
I
guy
mean,
needs
a young
to
guy
be,
and
honestly,
probably an underling.
That guy needs to be fucking put in prison for treason. I don't know. Like I said, there's four or five really good messages, and then you got to the end, and they are all that stuff is exactly plausible and things I could see happening in the world.
Mm-hmm.
And then they add the extra message. He-Man came on and told me, don't play with matches at the end, in a world where matches can't catch fire and burn down houses. I don't know.
Huh.
That's what I thought was it. The end of the episode was robbed of a lot of the power because they made a point that I don't personally, and I'm pretty pessimist when it comes to, and cynical when it comes to human nature. But I just, I just don't. There's no way that happens in the UK or the US or Canada.
I think the thing that bothered me the most in this episode was the reaction of his wife.
Agreed.
She's a pretty terrible partner.
Agreed.
Like, atrocious, to the point where I actually despise her at the end.
Agreed.
She is not supportive in any way. She's not empathetic to what he's actually going through and the decision that he has to make. All she cares about is the image that she's going to have once people find out that her husband is a pig fucker.
Never to mind that it's whatever you're suffering is going to be, you know, you're not in the center of trauma here,
exactly,
lady.
Yeah.
Your pig fucking husband's at the center. You are the next step out from that, but he's getting the most intense of the scorn and scrutiny.
Yeah. Easily.
So
I mean, you can denounce him. You can divorce him. You could do any of those things. Like, I didn't know my husband liked to fuck pigs. I'm out.
Well, and that's the thing. And if she did that and was open and honest, she'd be vilified in the public because that's a terrible thing. He doesn't like fucking pigs.
Right. Right. But she acts as if this is about her, and it's not. It is in very tangential ways about her, but not, like you said, the central focus.
And I thought that there was some interesting things that did at the beginning where, like, he chose to leave her in the dark and she had to find, like, I... Mm-hmm. And for I was thinking, like, okay, it is bullshit that they're not contacting his wife because, like, after, like, maybe the queen and parliament and the military were informed, she should be right there. But for whatever reason, no one told his wife she had to storm in. And so maybe some of that's resentment for that. But, yeah, honestly, by the end of the episode, I'm like, no, fuck this lady. This is a terrible way to treat a person in a very terrible situation.
Right. What choice does he have?
Right. He's got all this pressure. He's got, yeah. And honestly, I thought that the woman who went behind his back that set up this unauthorized operation, like, when he snatched her up and was, like, about to punch her, I'm like, I don't know how I feel about this. But then I'm like, you know what? I don't know there's a right or wrong emotional or physical response to here. Like,
I don't know how I would react.
This woman single-handedly collapsed the possibilities that I had without my knowledge as supposedly the guy calling the shots about my own fucking future, mostly.
Right.
She single-handedly collapsed this into a singularity where now I just have to let the princess die and face public scorn and humiliate the country or fuck a pig and do the same.
And humiliate myself.
I think I might grab a woman and choke her lightly and threaten her with bodily harm if a person in my employee did that. You know? Like, I almost think it'd be sexist not to. Absolutely, if it was a dude, I would have fucking come at him crazy. Jesus Christ. I was fucking outraged from this. I was not finding any of this funny.
I found it all pretty funny.
The journalistic prostitutes, I mean, that's, I keep, of late, I've been having a hard time because one of the big problems we have in this country, and probably around the world, is that our journalistic institutions are crumbling and ailing and running out of money and chasing the things that are popular and not the things that are true and the things that are important.
Right.
But a lot of that is on their own goddamn heads. Like, a lot of the problems with journalism has been brought about by journalists. And, you know, just like death by a thousand paper cuts of sacrificing their integrity, sacrificing their ethics, making concessions to marketing. And it's a downward spiral. Like, more money gets injected into the process. Ethics are compromised. Readership is lost. It's just, you know, and I don't know how to fix it. It's like, we definitely need strong journalism.
Sure. Yeah.
And institutions to keep our politicians honest. But,
well, it shows this lowest common denominator attitude. I mean, you can see that. I don't know if it was the BBC or if this was some, like, made up journalism network or something.
Right.
But they're unwilling to run with this story because of the damage it might do.
Which I thought was actually, like, you know, that was a principled stand. Like, this
absolutely,
is...
yeah. And then, well. Somebody comes in the room and says, well, guess what? Facebook is blowing up with it. Twitter's blowing up with it. And not only that, but American media has latched onto it. And now it's everywhere.
Yep.
Now even the big boys are doing it and they say, fine, fuck it. So, I mean, lowest common denominator there says whoever runs with this story is going to get the views, right? And so the views are what run the journalism industry, apparently.
Mm-hmm. But that's the problem. So I think most of what's wrong with journalism is this desire to be the first to break. It's no longer informing the people. It's informing the people regardless of context as soon as you fucking can.
Sure, yeah.
Like this woman, you know, prostituting herself out to get literally prostitute. She's paying for information with sex to get access to this building, and then she goes charging in with a cell phone and manages to get herself shot. Why did the British people need to know, like, if they're trying to cover it up, if they're trying, like, you absolutely try to get to the bottom of the truth, but do you have to do it at right this minute when it could jeopardize lives, when it could, you know, you rush and report incorrect information?
Right.
Like, I just, this scoop-centric nature of journalism, you know, and the eschewing of long-form investigative journalism, it's, I don't know, man. It's like a crack addiction that's destroying the whole thing.
Yeah, I mean, it feels like it's from this sort of information is power sort of idea where, you know, the first person to have the info or the first person to give the info is given all the credit for getting that info.
It's not the boat. It's not who gets it best.
Right.
And who has the most reasoned take on it. It's like, yeah, you're right. Who's got the breaking fucking news?
Yeah. Because people view it as something special. Like, I've got information that other people don't.
Right.
And I guess that is kind of ingrained into us. I don't know.
I don't know how you stop it because it's essentially the intersection of capitalism and journalism.
Sure.
And I don't, you know, because, you know, this is essentially a concept that was poorly argued throughout HBO's run of The Newsroom. Uh-huh. The people that will stop doing that are going to pay a heavy price. Like, they'll probably die trying to get back to the old ways of doing things.
Right. There's no incentive to do that if you're a journalist other than your own personal integrity.
Right.
And that doesn't get you anywhere.
Right. And I don't, you know, like I essentially feel like I'm composing the song that's the end of Western civilization, but I don't know what to do about it.
Sure.
But yeah, I thought the rule, that's the thing, like what I admire about Black Mirror is they set a preposterous situation and they just keep on making it worse. Like, you have to, the princess is gone. Shit. What's the demands? Demands are you fuck a pig.
Yep.
Fuck. We have to clamp down. No one can know so we can have the peace of mind to, like, make this. Oh, it was posted to YouTube.
Yeah. We got to get it taken down. We did. It's
already
popped
shared 50,000
up 60,
and now it's, you know, and it just kept on getting, like, the other thing is, like, you got to fuck a pig. Okay, fine. Yep. Let's fake it. Well, it's got to be this gonzo constantly shifting angle and a certain bit rate and certain lighting because this guy's an artist and he knows how he would fake it. And then you get there and it's like, you don't just get to fuck a pig for a bit. You have to do it to completion. Like, That was, I guess, half of the quote-unquote fun of the episode is seeing how tightly plotted all that stuff was and how people just really spent a long time thinking about the optimum way you could really fuck with a man.
Yeah, no, and it you know, plays off our worst instincts, which is, you know, essentially we're getting the things that we may not need, but it's the things that we want, you know? We have this morbid curiosity with certain things. Fucking a pig, for instance. I mean, that seems like if that were to happen in this country, or I'm sure in Britain, in reality, people, it would be very much be the same way. It would be an event. Everyone would want to watch it. At least I think so. Would you watch it?
No. Like I said, I would fight people to keep it from
doing
it, too.
I would absolutely watch it, but I think I'd wait for it to hit Netflix.
You'd binge it.
I would.
Yeah, you don't want to, you know, wait for every grunting, sweaty minute. No, I honestly think that it would almost be a patriotic duty not to watch it because if you are watching it, reasonably people can disagree, but I think it'd be your patriotic duty not to watch it because part of the terrorist demand is that this humiliate the government and the person doing it. And to the extent that you don't agree with the aims of the terrorist, then you should not give in and to what they want. Now, absolutely people would.
Oh, yeah.
But fuck no, I wouldn't do that. I mean, I would like to think that I wouldn't.
Yeah, it's just
especially
weird
in public. Oh God, like the idea that
to a bar and watch that. That's
come on.
I don't like to do that with most things.
And I just wish they showed a couple people like standing up and being like, "This isn't right. We shouldn't." I think there was a little bit of that. Like
So Tom Branson is in this, right?
Tom Branson from Downton Abbey. Alan Leach.
Yeah, he's in this. And his buddy was the only one who was like, come on, we don't need to see this.
Yeah, that was the only voice. In reality, I think this would cause fights. And this would cause, like, there's no prime minister supporters in that audience that would be like, this is bull. Like, shout or throw something at the TV, break something. Like, I don't know.
I don't know either.
I was surprised that there was, I mean, I think that's part of where the episode starts bordering on unrealism, is that it does show this monolithic crowd just rapturously happy that this guy's going to fuck a pig on live television, and then slowly turn to disgust, because that's what they wanted to do. And I don't know. That's to the extent that they did that, that like they molded, they stepped away from realistic depictions of what would happen in this fantastic situation to bend the narrative to points that they wanted to make. I felt the episode was lessened by that.
Yeah, I guess. I mean,
this is also
a little bit. I like the idea of this self-fulfilling prophecy sort of thing where, you know, we get what we want because that's what we want. And like, what we want may not be good for us in terms of this. And if we could just get off this idea of, you know, I'm watching something crazy happen and it has no value and it's not good for me, it's not good for anyone. If we could get away from that, then we would start getting things that are better for us more often. But that's not possible because we give into those pleasures.
Yeah.
Give into those desires, I guess.
Yeah.
I don't know. I think it works really well with the final message, which is, you know, if anyone had just stopped to look away from their screen long enough, they would have noticed the princess was already released and they wouldn't have had to go through with this.
Right.
It's that self-fulfilling, weird self-fulfilling prophecy.
I agree. But like, you know, I mean, I've already stated my objections to it. So
yeah.
The other thing I enjoyed about this is this was kind of a who's who of Penny Dreadful. And because it had this star, the prime minister actually plays Frankenstein's monster in Penny Dreadful, Rory Kinnear.
Okay.
Who I thought was for the longest time was the worst part of the show. But and then I actually really, really, really enjoyed his plot. And I think it's the best part of the very flawed final season of Penny Dreadful. I had Shahzad Latif, who plays Dr. Jekyll.
Hmm.
He was playing, I think, some kind of Muslim scholar that they drug up to, you know, to speak for all Muslims as far as like
okay.
who's responsible for the attack.
Right.
In one of the side interviews. And also funny, they had this thing where I think, certainly I didn't recognize the actress. I guess an actress from Downton Abbey supposedly was best friends with the princess, and they're interviewing her.
Uh-huh.
And I think it was a fake actress, but they had the real Tom Branson from Downton Abbey. I thought that was quite enjoyable.
And they had Master Lewin. Master Lewin was kind of the...
You're right.
Maester Lewin.
Maester Lewin was the prime minister's advisor?
Yes. Yes, I think that's what he was.
Yeah, I'm not sure what you'd call it. Like I said, I don't know the proper terminology for all these different sub-ministers.
I keep calling him the president, and I know he's not
the prime minister,
but,
sure.
You know.
Sure. I don't know. So, yeah, like I said, private citizen Aaron would fuck a pig to save a person's life. Public figure.
President, prime minister Aaron.
Nope. I say nope. We do not negotiate with terrorists, especially about pig fucking, of all things.
Okay.
Do you think something... one of the things that Kristen asked us that we haven't talked about yet is, like, do you think this would happen, which I think we did talk about, and why
hasn't... I think it could happen.
Why hasn't it happened already?
It's a risky thing to do. Well, so it's more than risky. I mean, the guy at the end kills himself because he knows.
Because, yeah, the SAS is going to,
right,
sooner or later, crash through his front door and,
yeah,
and the full might of
James
the...
Bond will swing in through his window, assassinate him, and then,
yep,
fuck his grandmother or something. I don't,
yep,
know.
You're gonna be in for a bad time, and it's either going to result in your death or imprisonment and unimaginably austere, harsh conditions for the rest of your natural life.
Right.
That's a pretty... high. Well, for example, like when we first did the Commission podcast, mm-hmm, speaking of, what did we think was going to be the majority of the commissions?
We thought people were going to troll us.
People are going to pay money to make us watch, essentially to be the Dr. Forrester of the Mystery Science Theater 3000 and just make us suffer.
Right.
Make us watch the worst unimaginable dreck and make a podcast out of it.
Mm-hmm.
We were pleasantly surprised. The vast majority of people wanted to actually get our sincere thoughts on things that they enjoyed.
Mm-hmm.
So with just...
And why is that?
with just a few hundred dollars at stake, essentially, any skin in the game, the idea of trolling instantly becomes less appealing, which is why the internet, there's so much troll culture, because it's free, it's cheap, it's easy, and it's consequence-free.
Yep.
The second there's a single consequence, that's when you start, people stop acting like assholes.
And you have to start weighing the pros and cons, you know?
Right.
Is my point good enough? Will it be understood enough for me to pay the price to make it?
Now, that's just for trolls. Why a terrorist organization hasn't done something like this, I don't know. And I guess I'm kind of afraid that, except for I imagine they would be like, well, just that's never going to happen. So if you... if you're going to blow up a building or shoot up a school or bomb a mall, you might as well do that with the element of surprise, or rather than say, you got 24 hours to fuck a pig, President Obama or President Trump.
Right.
And give them a chance to defuse it and humiliate you on a national... you flip it around and humiliate you on a national stage. I guess that's the thing, because the stakes just, you know... so the president fucks... best case scenario, the president fucks a pig. I think... you know, my understanding of the Western world and American culture and British culture is, like, I think that people would kind of unite with the pig fucker.
I certainly would.
Yeah.
Like, I would
respect
empathize.
The hell out of a person that would humiliate themselves and degrade themselves to spare a person's, like, that's
pretty
fucking altruistic.
So let me ask you this. Does that, you've said two things that I think are kind of in conflict here. One of which is, we do not negotiate with terrorists, especially on the pig fucking thing.
Yep.
The other is, I think the public would understand if you went ahead and fucked that pig.
Oh, I.
So what do you, where do you come down on this?
Well, this is the
ultimately
problem with representational democracy. the whole idea that, like, imagine, and I'm pretty sure this is like a Ray Bradbury story, but imagine everyone had a button. Every citizen over the age of 18 has something on their cell phone where they can do instant yes or no on something happening.
Sure.
If, let's say, you know, President Trump's in office and Barron Trump, he's, what, 10, 11 years old, gets kidnapped, and some terrorists are like, we're going to pull his guts out unless we get all these guys released from all these prisons, or like whatever the demand is. And if you ask the American public, should the president cave their demands to save their 10-year-old son, I imagine a vast majority of people would push yes. But I don't think that's a correct action. And the reason we don't have that kind of technology is because mobs are dangerous and they don't think things through logically and with any kind of long-term consequences. And that's why we have elected officials in lieu of that, because in sober moments when things are calm, we're supposed to, like, I want this guy. He's the best guy for the job. I trust him to make those decisions, even if in the moment I wouldn't make that same decision.
Sure.
You know?
Okay. Yeah. I mean, I certainly would be pushing the yes or no button dependent on the stakes. So, like, you know, releasing a bunch of terrorists would be very different from fucking a pig.
Sure.
You know, fuck that pig. Who cares? Mm-hmm. Like, big fucking deal. You're gonna save some people. Release a bunch of terrorists? I don't know. Now the equation changes.
But the pig fucking is a pretty slippery slope. Like, there's a reason you have a blanket and don't negotiate with terrorists is because you're just encouraging that behavior to happen again. It's like, for example, I used to think...
I understand that.
Right.
But, like, if the stakes are so low, like, what if the stake was, we demand that you go outside the White House and scream, I love America into the air?
Okay, that's
well,
that
now you're negotiating
so
with terrorists.
No stakes.
Right, that's my point. Like, the pig stakes, if certainly in my mind, are not stakes at all. I mean, yes, the man is humiliated because he's fucking a pig, but
that
I know he didn't choose to fuck that pig.
Yeah.
I know that he's only doing this to save a life. I'm not going to fault him for that.
Yeah.
So, like, for me, I would hit that no button.
And I guess that's why I said
I would hit that
private
yes
citizen versus public figure, because it's not like the president fucking a pig is not just a president fucking a pig. He is – it's America fucking the pig. And there is something – I don't know what it's worth, but national prestige and honor and respect is worth something on the national stage.
Sure.
And
– but I almost think – I mean, that almost seems like a noble sacrifice to me.
Yeah, maybe. But there again,
in this one instance.
When you're dealing, certainly. I'm not sure when you're dealing with the Putins of the world and we're dealing with whoever the hell runs China and the world and North Korea. Like, I don't know that they have as high-minded ideals as all that. And the reality is that's... Yeah, like if you're just negotiating with your allies, that's what was all diplomacy. Then you could do whatever the fuck you want, and nothing would matter because we're all friends. You have to eventually negotiate with people that don't respect you and don't like you and want to trick and deceive you. And that's where fucking the pig are like, well, shit, they fucked the pig because one person's life. Like, I don't know what the thought process would then feed into these more kind of sinister or not sinister antagonistic. People that we'd have to deal with. I don't know. Like I said,
it's, you have
if
a
the whole
good line though, I will fuck you like a pig if you don't do what we want.
I will go at you for an hour, and I will not stop until I get my nut. Yeah. No, I mean maybe that would be terrifying to to the premier of China. I don't know. You touch Taiwan, and I will fuck you. I don't know.
Yeah, he just needed to own it a little more. Go in there, gung ho, just ready to fuck this pig. Mm-hmm. None of the crying, none of the gnashing.
That's the thing. Like, if
just go in there and bang the shit out of that pig.
I think, yeah, Private Citizen Aaron Hubbard would give a nice workmanlike performance. He would. I would curate the visual things I had in the media, which and my,
you're gonna
my
need
peripheral
those.
Vision and all that. And that's the other thing. Is like, I think he was spending a lot too much time looking at the pig.
Yeah, you're right.
Yeah,
you're
like
right.
That's
went why
wrong.
It took an hour.
It's like when you're walking on a tightrope, don't look down, man. When you're fucking a pig, absolutely don't look down.
Yeah,
stuff some wax.
I would want some VR goggles. That's what I would want.
Sure. Well, I mean, then you're essentially using a fleshlight, as far as you're concerned.
Right. That's the whole point. Yeah. Like, if you're ever gonna get off, you gotta just do everything you can.
I'm pretty sure a VR helmet would probably be against the rules in this contest, but...
Oh, right, his face wouldn't be showing.
Yeah, yeah. Well, you rip your eyes off and replace them with Geordie-style things that
there
can
you go.
Beam any kind of... Yeah. But yeah, I don't know. Like I said, there's a lot of complicated things, and I was surprised. I don't know. I feel like this... I enjoyed this a lot, and it got me worked up, but I couldn't help but think that... If they were a bit more even-handed and treated some of these more realistically from a political and a public reaction standpoint and showed a little bit more variety, that it would actually have been a stronger point than the points that they kind of forced it to make. But clearly you don't agree, so maybe I'm wrong.
Well, difference of opinion.
What else do you want to talk about?
I just want to say I really like the show, and it's made by a guy named Charlie Brooker, and he made one of my other favorite series. It's not one of my favorite series, but it's probably my favorite zombie miniseries, which is Dead Set. He made that a couple of years before he made this. And I really like that. It's about a zombie outbreak that happens on the set of a reality TV show, like Big Brother style. It's really good. As far as zombie things go, really good.
I was not familiar with any of this guy's work, but you know, three episodes in, I'm pretty highly impressed. And you say this is the worst or the least?
I think so, but after having discussed this one with you, you might like the next one the least.
Oh, well, shit.
I know, yeah. Number three is fan-fucking-tastic all around, though.
Okay.
And God damn it, is it intriguing.
Really?
So,
all right,
well,
we'll
have plenty to talk about
that.
There.
I almost want to finish, but we're not. We're just going to hit pause, and the next time, some amount of time will pass for us, but it'll be instantaneous for you, and we'll be on to the next one.
All right, we're back with 102... 15 Million Merits. This is the one that this is my second favorite one.
Okay.
Of the season.
Why did you think that I would hate this one? Or not like it, I guess.
You said something about contrivances, and I think there are a couple contrivances in this. Is at least what I remember from that first podcast.
Well, I guess I'm more apt to forgive contrivances when they're so far into the future or so evolved from present society that I can no longer draw useful conclusions.
Right.
So, like, I'm ready. If I buy a world where people live in hamster cages full of bicycles that I guess power human society in some kind of Rube Goldberg Matrix way, then sure, why not?
Okay, maybe now that I'm thinking about it, maybe it was that you thought episode one like covered a little too much. maybe like tried to make too many statements about too many different things. And I feel like there's a lot going on in this episode.
I do think this thing would have been stronger by far had they focused on. I think if the guy just slit his own neck on live television, that would have been a perfect ending to this. Instead,
I think so.
They decided to make it about selling out, I guess.
It's a lot darker the way it went, I think, personally, than the guy killing himself.
Mm-hmm.
At least if he's killing himself, he's making a statement. Here, he's just, you know, participating in the system.
But why? Like, what about this person? I mean, is the point they're making that anyone will sell out regardless of the circumstances?
Yeah, so I think
when presented the opportunity, because this guy was ideologically motivated enough to save up
right.
15 million like mind-numbing credits just to stick it to these guys,
uh-huh.
and then they're like, "Oh, we're going to give you a television show where you can say this shit." I don't know. I guess
right. It's kind of an allure of stardom, I guess, an allure of fame and wealth.
Just nothing about this guy's character made me think that he would be open to that kind of plea.
Right. It makes me wonder, why did he take it?
Yeah.
Why do
you
think he took it?
I don't think So
do you think it's a failure of the show? Did you not?
I almost want to say, just throw up my hands and be like, I don't think he would have, and I think it's dumb. But I'm going to try to answer your question.
Okay.
Because I did briefly entertain the idea of maybe he did the calculus and he thought, I can spit truth to people and maybe wake people up and be
right.
more of a civil, even if I'm selling out and I'm doing it from this mansion cubicle and, or, you know, whatever,
mm-hmm.
maybe that's better than if I just take my life. Although I think he would have reached more people and woke more people up had he taken his own life. And it doesn't seem
yeah.
like he's even particularly enjoying the fruits of his labor.
Is he? So I'm trying to figure that out because he very much has this like ritualized relationship with this piece of glass at the end, right? Like almost as if he has bought into the very system that he so despised, which brought him to the point where he got an offer. You know, like at the end, he's seen taking this piece of glass and putting it down in a case in a very ritualized fashion. He's staring out at, you know, this big bank of monitors, I guess.
Well, see, he still doesn't even see the outside. I thought maybe
right.
he's finally gotten an outside view. But I mean, what is
this
world?
So in this system.
What is this world like? I don't understand. Like there, and maybe that's a strength of the episode that like there was a lot of things just outside of fringes of my understanding. Like, what's up with the
right.
people wearing yellow? Why does everyone wear yellow sweatpants? Why is everyone, except for Simon Cowell and Paula Abdul and Randy Jackson, like why does everyone live this gray, miserable existence and pimp out their digital selves? Why is everyone pedaling bicycles? Why?
Yeah, so it seemed like I think what was happening here is that they are powering their civilization, right? Which
I mean, that just is
there's
a hard
a lot
sell
of metaphor
for me.
Here, and
yeah, sure.
And it's more steeped in the metaphor than it is the actual realities of this world, because you know they're trying to say something, and you know, fact and logic be damned. In order to, get
I wonder if this is
across.
Like one of the nightmares. So I've been thinking a lot about this of late. Like, at what point does automation, you know, drive us to the point where work is superfluous for 90% of the population,
mm-hmm.
at which point either they have to die or the people that are – because it's not like that when you automate something, the value that's being derived from that labor is not going anywhere. It's still enriching the people that are owning the automation. It's just now you've
yeah.
replaced that labor with automation.
Mm-hmm.
So it seems like there's going to be the situation where we have a world coming quickly, I think, like where maybe a third to half of people not only don't have to work, but can't work.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, there's a couple ways that could go through to Star Trek Utopia, where we have matter replication and essentially unlimited energy, and everyone just does what their heart desires the whole time. If they want to sit on the butt and play video games, they want to be like Cisco's dad and open up a cafe in San Francisco,
mm-hmm.
they want to go explore the universe in a starship, whatever. There's no, you know, there's no limits placed on you by what you can afford, because everyone has the basics. And there's a lot of stuff even now people are like trying to prime us for this post-automation universe by saying we should have a guaranteed basic income where everyone gets this minimal payment that allows them to take care of all their material needs,
mm-hmm.
like food, shelter, clothing. is this some kind of nightmare scenario of that where we still have this puritanical desire to punish people that don't work and make – like it's literally doing nothing. They're saying it powers a spotlight or whatever, but really this is just busy work. Mm-hmm. So that they can divvy out their and earn, quote unquote, earn their rewards rather than just give it to them. You have to ride this fucking bike for 8 hours a day. It doesn't do anything, but it satisfies our desire to force people to work because that's, you know, we come from the situation where a freeloader on society is a net drain on the resources to the future where the freeloader might be something you're forced into. There's nothing useful for you to do.
Sure. I mean, I don't know that this episode necessarily has commentary on that. I feel like it's more commenting on the complacency of society and the you know, the entertainment industry and, you know, how we kind of fuel that very thing. I mean, if you look at episode one, it was certainly there are some parallels to be drawn here, like, you know, the idea that the public is the very thing that's allowing these systems to flourish. Because, I mean, in this episode, you can clearly see they're powering the lights, for instance, on this entertainment show, whatever it is, this American Idol-esque Star Search kind of thing.
Show us what you got.
Right. But it's those – it's that class of people who are riding the bikes who are powering this whole thing and enabling it. Mm-hmm. And it's also the thing that's keeping them down, right? I mean, they're complicit in a system that is imprisoning them.
Yeah.
And I think that's the real thrust of this episode, is what it's trying to get at, is the idea that – you know, the co-opting of the media, even of the things that would destroy it. Like, you look at the speech that this guy gives at the end, which is violent in its intensity. Mm-hmm. I mean, it is raw and it is completely honest, the most truthful thing he's ever seen on the show before.
Right.
And he takes that and he packages it and he sells it, and it now it is part of the system. It's no longer a problem for the system. It becomes part of it. And I think it's interesting, like, you know, as a podcaster, and if I'm trying to get, you know, I'm selling this idea of authenticity because that's kind of how we started and that's what we are, is we're not part of, you know, the TV industry, right?
Right.
And we're going to tell it to you like it is. At what point, when do we become big enough that that is actually a piece of the system? So it was interesting for me to think about personally. And I feel like that's where the show is really going, because at the end, this guy is a part of it. I mean, despite what he thinks he might be able to accomplish, like, is there a point where you become so deeply ingrained in the system that whatever you have to say, be it anti-establishment or not, is also a part of that system?
Yeah, I mean, that's an interesting take on it. It's interesting because this felt like a long episode. It felt like it was longer than the other one. And I thought the star, the Daniel Kaluuya, I think is this. I have no idea how you pronounce that. Kaluuya, but it's certainly not Kahlua. He's, throughout the most episode, has this like very flat affect, and he's just doing nothing just so that last speech he gives can just blow you the fuck away.
Yeah.
Which is pretty generous as an actor to essentially act like you can't act or you have nothing, no passion or nothing to say, and then you let it all out at the end. But I thought that was a little bit weak because I had a hard time kind of connecting with his character and seeing, like, you know, what he really felt about situations and whatnot. He does come alive a little bit when I forget what the I don't know any of these characters' names.
His name's Bingham and her name's Abby.
So she's Bing and Abby. Okay, yep. Bing and Abby. And Jessica Brown Findlay, which I have a huge soft spot for her portrayal as Lady Sybil from Downton Abbey.
She's the British Scarlett Johansson, yeah?
Yeah, except for I'm not that crazy about Scarlett Johansson, and for whatever reason, I guess if you get an olive-skinned, dark-haired Scarlett Johansson is where it's at.
Yeah, I'm with you.
She's fantastic, and I like you have her, you know, weighed in on her sweat. But I don't understand society enough. It's like, why is this the first time he's seen her? It seems like everyone's assigned to the exact same banks and whatnot. And
so she says that she turned 21 and just came to the facility. Like, she wanted to go to a different one because her sister was there, but that was all full, so she came here.
Okay. So there's a little bit of world building there about...
like, when you're an adult, When you turn 21, you have the option, or do you?
You have to, like, if you're a certain class. I don't know. I would like to know more of that myself. And she replaced the guy who got turned into a yellow, right?
Yes.
That's why there was an opening.
Yeah.
Okay, so that explains why he's seeing her for the first time.
He turned into a janitor, which there's some weird classist stuff going on here.
Right. Seems like, but is that because this guy, like, I don't understand how you get fat in the society. If you have to peddle your ass off for junk food, it seems like that's a self-correcting cycle. Like, I don't know what the exploit is for people to just...
Maybe you come in fat? Maybe you're before you're 21. So I don't know if you're forced into this when you're 21 or if you decide to go.
Someone decides.
Why not?
Well, because it's not a take your shot. You have to then earn 15 million units, which seems like a, you know, what do you say? That's 6 months, essentially 6 months of labor.
Yeah, this very much felt like white collar, which were the bikers, blue collar sort of people, which were the janitors. And then the stars, right? The elite.
See, I thought that was it's my standing so far problem with Black Mirror, is they try to shove too much commentary into any one episode. Like, here
I was worried you wouldn't like it.
You've got, and I no, I thought this was fine. It's just fine. You know, I didn't get like pumped up about it. I didn't get angry about it. I saw and I appreciated what they're saying. Like, they have commentary on fat shaming.
Right.
They have commentary on social media and what an empty life it is and how people waste their time. Like, how social media is starting to become an extension of our materialistic lifestyles, except for now we're exchanging time and energy and money for literally things that aren't even real.
Yeah.
And I, you know, as a gamer who is largely immune to that response, like, I don't really spend money even on games I'm super passionate about, or very rarely, and I do it for a utility more than like a decoration thing. I'm always amazed at people that will drop $30-$40 just to make the character look snazzier.
Yeah.
And I'm outraged that people can drop $20, $30 to essentially win the game.
I mean,
I wouldn't even play a game like that.
This is very much, in a nutshell, the situation you see in gaming, which is, like, so many gamers decry these microtransactions. They're like, fuck this, I hate this method of funding a game. And then they go out and they buy it anyway.
Right.
I mean, you are supporting, you are propping up the very thing that you hate.
But there's also a little bit of commentary about, like, the idiotocracy thing, like, where you've got the guy who I just found despicable.
Of course, road, like, you're supposed to.
He's not funny. He's not smart. He's not insightful. He is just
a public porn watcher.
He's just a consumer. And not only that, he's a fairly ignorant one. There's so much stuff piled on here. And then they had, like, I felt like her accepting the porno job was some kind of jab at the porno industry, that she's just strung out on drugs. Even, and I thought that was also weird that, like, before they take the stage of American Idol, they're made to drink this stuff that will make them comply with anything that's suggested. So, like, what is the authentic choice they're even being asked to make?
Right.
But I really don't understand why he made the choice at the end, because it does seem like antithetical, whatever the fuck. It seems like,
antithetically, yeah.
Thank you to everything that he stood for thus far in the episode. And that's like, I don't even if you take out Jessica, what is her name?
Finley.
Jessica Brown Finley. Finley. Even if you take her out of the equation, I still don't think he would do it. But the fact that he thinks that they murdered this unique snowflake gift of a person and enslaved her into some weird porn empire. I don't know. Like, I just don't understand why he did it. I don't understand why he sold out, unless the argument is he thought he would make a bigger difference.
Right.
Trying to wake up people and, you know, but then.
And I think he might have thought that in the beginning, but by the end, I feel like he has turned a corner on it and he's now just.
It's
living
part of
the
a
life,
shtick.
Right. Now he's turned into one of the people that he so despised.
So I guess that's what I'm saying. Like, I feel like Black Mirror is very cynical, and I don't.
Oh yeah,
I'm not. I know this might be a surprise to people, but I'm not that cynical of a person. Like, I can tell you everything is wrong with the world, but I also think that in the final analysis we shall overcome and prevail, because we have so far. You know, we got a several thousand track year track record of overcoming and things getting better and whatnot, with occasional step back here or there, but I don't know. Like I said, like, what am I supposed to think at the end of this episode?
I think you're supposed to be devastated by the outcome.
So they're going...
I don't think this is positive in any way.
Okay, I agree with that.
Okay.
I agree with that. But I think that the only... I'd only really feel that devastation if I thought, if I really got inside his head and felt what he was feeling in that moment. And but they don't, because he was, other than when he's animated and telling these guys to fuck you, right. Like, he's such a cipher that I don't. When yeah. he goes back to the blank effect and he's processing their decision, and then we see him at the end giving more, you know, scripted kind of, you know, outrage, I don't understand why. And then he looks out the window enigmatically, and maybe I need to see it more times. I don't feel like I want to see it more times because I thought this episode was just kind of okay, but
yeah. Yeah, it also has an interesting commentary on stardom, I think. You know, a lot of people wish they could be stars. A lot of people want to be famous and wealthy. And that seems like a dream. And, you know, you've got Abby here being co-opted into the porn industry, and her speeches always kind of end with that, right? Like, oh, I meet all these good-looking guys, and I live in a fancy place. My life is a dream. I love it. But you can clearly see that she doesn't mean any of the things she's saying.
Right.
And there's a couple of lines from...
Which also might be a commentary on consent. You know, they fucking roofie her...
Oh yeah,
and then keep her roofied throughout her existence. Is that, you know, whether she enjoys it or not is almost beside the point. Did she ever agree to this in any kind of sense of the word, right. ethical sense of the word?
And there's also the idea that Rupert Everett, who's one of the judges. He's Simon Cowell.
Yeah,
yeah. He when he's describing this, he basically says, "You have almost a duty." To the people who will never be in your spot to take advantage of it, right? Like the people who aren't as beautiful or talented or anything like that. If they were given the opportunities that you are given right now, they would snatch them up in a second. And if you don't, it's a slap across their face.
Right.
He kind of positions it as that. And
which is weird because he doesn't have to because she's drugged.
I wonder like how effective that drug is. Like, does it actually make you unable to say no?
It's literally called compliance, and it's compulsory to drink before you go on the stage. So
yeah.
I wonder. And what's really interesting is that, so that implies that she didn't have an authentic choice, but he did, because he didn't drink that.
Absolutely, yeah.
He kept her trash and
which is probably what they're getting at, right? Whether you get up there and you're influenced by outside forces or internal forces, you're still going to make the same decision. And that's certainly not true of everyone, but I think it's the more cynical view to take of people.
What's up with the penguin?
This is his totem? I don't know.
I mean, she makes it out of origami as some way to have some kind of artistic self-expression in her day, and it's destroyed every day.
Yeah.
Then at the end, you see that he's made like a long-lasting metal one, which implies that he still has feelings for her. But it's weird to erect an idol to the thing that you're betraying the memory of every single day.
I know.
Which it feels like there should have been more to this story. They should have either ended it before, or there should be more to this story.
Yeah, I'm kind of with you. And I actually never felt the love story on this. Like, it seemed very, very shortcutted. Like,
well,
this guy.
I also think it was one sided. I don't think she was in love with him. And they also set up the little mousy girl that was in love with him.
Which I think it was completely pointless.
I think it's only there to make sure that you understand that her relationship with Bing is the same as Bing's relationship with Abby. Did you say her name was?
Yeah.
Jessica Brown Findlay.
Yeah, but it's so weird because it's not even just that it's one-sided. It feels gross in that he's kind of buying her affections here. Like, her physical affections, right? I mean, he's buying her this 15 million credit ticket that's super expensive, would take her 6 months to earn. He's giving it to her. And then on the way up in the elevator, he's trying to hold her hand. He's taking more advantage of this situation than he really should be.
Really? Because I thought offering your hand, like holding someone's hand, is not necessarily a sexual. I mean, I think he was taking it as sexual, but I don't think she was. And that she was reading that as him trying to be a friend, and he's trying to get, you know, he's trying to... I don't even know what that looks like. What does it look like to fall in love in this world?
And what is it... I mean, what does it look like if I worked 6 months and I spent all the money I got during that period on a gift for someone? There are expectations attached to that gift, right? The certain gratitudes.
Mm-hmm.
And whether
I don't know they should be, but yes, so sure.
Right. I mean, it's societal pressure at
yes.
that point.
It's the old, like, you take if you go out for steak and lobster, right there in the menu, there's dick on the side.
Right. And I'm not saying that that's a good thing. I think that's
nope.
a bad thing.
Sure.
But it's certainly ingrained and it's built in. And I felt that in this story, and I didn't like it.
Huh.
The starting their relationship this way made it feel like less of a positive relationship and more of like an advantageous thing for him.
But that also might be part of the commentary, which is yet another thing they're trying to do, which
maybe
is kind
so.
Of like I said, you know, they got this kind of they're playing with the idea of consent, and they're playing with the idea of this nice guy, you know, offering this thing with no strings attached, except for it does kind of have some strings attached.
Yeah.
So yeah, and again, that's where I think this stuff is very much a mixed bag, because like I don't, at the end, there's so many things they're throwing against the wall and seeing what sticks. I don't think any of it did.
Okay.
And then on top of that, you have this extremely unrealistic scenario that I'm trying to figure out. I mean, one of the reasons I stayed engaged is I kept on paying attention, thinking that eventually this will make sense, or there'll be some kind of Twilight Zone Matrix reveal of something horrible about the society.
Oh, I think
other
there
than
was.
Just oh no, I think there is too. The society yeah. is just gross in a vulgar kind of way, like a common, just nothing interesting happens.
Yeah,
the video games are even shit. You know,
and this show Bother Guts. I couldn't help but be reminded of Idiocracy. That's Ow My Balls.
Yeah,
I mean that's
yeah.
essentially what it is. And apparently this is like a game show where you're trying to beat the hosts.
Well, yeah, you're trying.
Somehow?
I mean, it's also you are humiliating fat people, mm-hmm. the yellows, and you're also yeah. I don't know.
Yeah,
I mean the other thing commentary is the online commercials.
Yeah, and
that's the one that I thought That's the one that I thought was cool, like the coolest part, and it's also yeah. just kind of very low key. The whole idea that like you can't even shut your eyes because it'll
right.
detect it. And then be obnoxious as fuck until you comply, which is kind of
yeah.
where, like, I got ad block, so, mm-hmm. you know, and I try to strategic and judiciously use it.
Uh-huh.
Like, I don't run around ad block all the time. I run around ad block, like, if I'm at a site and they fucking cover my whole screen with something.
Yeah.
Ad block.
Sure.
You know? And then, like, if I'm on a site that doesn't do that kind of stuff and still has ads and stuff, I don't know. I mean, that's kind of moral hypocrisy too. It's not. Why should I be able to make those choices? In reality, those things are either effective or they're not. And you know, I don't know.
To me, this was the scariest part because it's something we live with today.
Like, yeah,
it's all over the place, and it's not like you. Yeah, your mind immediately goes to the online stuff, but think about. In a given day, how much advertising you see. It is far more than you realize.
Pervasive.
Far more.
Yeah.
I mean, you walk outside your house, you literally are bombarded with advertising every second.
And we are human ad blocks because we drive past billboards and like we see them, but we don't.
Right. But there's no way to get rid of that. And it makes me wonder why the hell we allowed this in the first place. Why are we allowing billboards on our streets? Oh, yeah. Well, you're rubbing your fingers together.
Money.
The
people that have the land to put it up are offered money, and then that's the only consideration.
Yeah. It's shocking to me because it is essentially what's happening in this episode, which is advertising you are powerless to remove.
Right.
And if you don't want to see any advertising whatsoever in your life, guess what? It's impossible.
Right.
So you are – that choice is removed from you, and it's – you know, it's extra interesting here because, like, those noises that they're using, those high-pitched tones to get you to resume viewing of the advertising mm-hmm. is actually the same kind of thing they did in the last episode right before the pig-fucking thing to get people to turn the stuff off.
Sure, sure.
It was. I noticed that it was really kind of
you're right.
tricky
when
and cool.
When you see them right back-to-back, it's hard not to make that connection.
Yeah. But I don't know. That, to me, was the scariest thing where you are essentially spending money, hard-earned money, they're biking all day, in order to remove advertising that you should have the option to not see for free.
Well, and the other thing is, like, I guess I was more curious about the world, and I wish they'd spent more time on that, because like you're allowed to make decisions about what entertainment you consume and mm-hmm. where you consume it, and you're allowed to make decisions about what you eat and drink.
Yeah.
You're not allowed to make, and you're allowed to do whatever the fuck you want with your fucking virtual avatar, but nobody can do anything but wear gray sweatpants?
Yeah.
Like, why don't they sell a red stripe down your sweatpants for,
I don't know.
$10,000? That's the weird thing about this version of capitalism is, like, if you can sell a red stripe down someone's virtual sweatpants for 1,000 merits, I bet you could sell a real red stripe for
2,000.
$10,000, yeah.
Yeah.
So,
well, I think.
That's what they've realized is, like, if we ban that, we actually make more money because the virtual, I mean,
right,
virtual shit is
zero cost.
We've learned that as podcasting. Like, it's a hell of a lot easier to make a podcast than it is to fucking stuff T-shirts in the bags and mail them out to people.
Sure.
So, like, if given a choice, you always want to do digital fulfillment because that's zero extra work. It also makes me realize, what a scam it is that they sell virtual products at the same rate, like for video games. Like, you can download something for $60, or you can go out and buy the disc for $60.
Yeah.
That digital download is so much more profitable.
Oh, yeah.
But on the other hand, maybe that's why, like, you know, video games haven't really increased price in like 20 years.
Right.
Maybe that's why, because, like, increasingly they're more profitable because they're more digital.
Sure. Definitely, I'd say.
I think
the gray sweatpants, like, these all, everybody kind of looks the same here. I think that's just an indication of how the system views us as consumers.
It's just a dystopian thing, yeah.
Yeah, but I mean, it does say something about, you know, the cogs that we are kind of in this machine.
Yeah.
And how we're all implicit.
Now that I'm talking about it, maybe you're right, because the more I talk about it, the more I see this episode as being kind of hacky. Not only is it way too unfocused, but it also just employs every kind of, it stands on the shoulders of much better dystopian works. It stands on the backs of 1984 and Equilibrium and Brave New World, and even there's even elements of like The Island and all that in that and it gets all that shit for free. It didn't come up with it.
Yeah, it's sort of just a modernized version of a stew of kind of all of those things.
Exactly. So yeah. I just kind of sometimes I wish that they had picked a thrust and really fully explored that concept within this world rather than try to just make so many damn points.
Yeah, you're right. And I think you will be pleasantly surprised by the next episode.
I mean, you've built, I mean, because to be honest, you've really built it up. Like,
episode 3 is real strong, and it doesn't matter. Like, you, without like knowing the whole episode and the premise and how it turns out, mm-hmm. I think no matter how much people say, oh, I loved it, it was amazing, your expectations probably aren't high enough. Because it's really good.
Holy shit, I just increased them double. Now
there you
what?
Go.
Now what, motherfucker? You want to say
you
it
know
again?
What? Increase them again. Increase them again and then watch it.
They're at 1,000% higher. Now what?
But the next episode is much more focused.
Okay.
It's much more about one thing.
Well, it's funny because like all of the season 3, have you seen any season 3 Black Mirror?
Not 3. I've seen the first 2.
All the season 3 Black Mirrors have been much more singularly focused, which is why I was kind of, maybe that's they've realized themselves. I was like, hey, you know what?
Uh-huh.
I mean, last one I thought was pretty focused, but then they shoved, like I said, a He-Man or G.I. Joe moral at the end on top of it. And I'm like, huh. This one is just like, what are you rebelling against? What do you got?
Right.
Social media, rape culture, you know, selling out, advertising,
entertainment,
everything, everything.
Yeah. I'm with you. These are definitely the weaker two.
Yeah.
This first one and the second one.
Like I said, I wouldn't describe the first one as weak at all. And I wouldn't even describe this one as weak. It's just...
No, I like this one a little more.
Yeah, I like it fine. I just felt like that, again, it seemed like... And these are things that I thought were fairly obvious that, like, on the script stage, they should realize that, hey, there's way too much here, and maybe this is even, like, you know, in fact, this was almost an hour, no commercials, right?
Uh-huh.
Which, like, wow, there was a lot of quiet just staring at a guy consuming media and whatnot that maybe they didn't need to have there. I don't know.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
So that's my thought. You got anything else you want to talk about in this episode?
No, I think that's about it.
All right, I've set my expectations for the next episode to be infinity times infinity plus one.
Okay, good.
we will see when we return what that how that goes. I guess the thing that really bugs me, and I understand, maybe I understand why this decision was made, is for me, the moment where I actually felt something real was where Bing has, he's invested his entire inheritance.
Mm-hmm.
And we can see that he uses this because he's very dissatisfied with the world and he doesn't like this advertising and he's got the ability to just casually dismiss, which that's another thing I liked. I liked all the UI elements, like how they interact with the digital world and did like to come here and go away and like, yeah, sorry, like, yeah. But very low key Minority Report. I thought that was really cool. But he goes to onto this Hot Shots or whatever. She craps
Wraith Babes.
She gets shunted over the Wraith Babes. He's now broke, and he uses up the last of his credits. I forget what he does, but he's fucking broke. And then the advertisement for her deflowering episode starts up.
Right.
And he's desperately trying to dismiss it, and it says insufficient funds to dismiss the
tries
ad.
Tries to close his eyes.
Tries to close his eyes, and then
viewing.
It does that. So then he ends up...
He's locked in the room because you can't leave while the portal's inactive while the advertiser's running.
Exactly. So he's stuck here, and he ends up bashing his head, which there was no consequences to that. But honestly, I felt like that would have been a strong end to the episode.
Sure.
The only problem is then you miss out. Like, there's no reason for Daniel Kaluuya as Bing to like he is a complete, he's just a bowl of chocolate pudding at that point.
Right. Yeah.
Because he hasn't been allowed to do anything except for freak out the end, which was still pretty amazing. But you would have been robbed of his just raging against the machine at the end, which was pretty impressive.
Yeah.
But that is, I don't know if. That amazing performance by him justifies the 20 minutes of fat that was included. And the fact that they didn't have any, I don't know. And like, maybe they could have used that to build something with the little mousy girl where she goes on in some kind of, I don't know. But like, I just, the natural place to end the show was with him sitting in a shattered room where he's still, you know, getting fucked, shoved down his throat.
Mm-hmm.
But then you lose his performance.
Yeah, and the other thing I think you lose that I found interesting was how the other half lives, right? Because he's a guy who has, like, this strict regimen where he's eating all these fresh fruits because he's got this inheritance that he can actually spend a few credits. You know, he doesn't indulge in the entertainment necessarily. But then he's got to live like the pauper, right, in order to save up. And I really enjoyed that the next scene, the next time you see him eating, he's eating like these horrible fish stick reconstituted disgusting things.
And he's
watching all the advertising. He's stealing food. And I really felt that struggle was pretty interesting.
Yeah.
To try and scrape and grind and get your way to financial stability.
I do, like, man, like, I was really rooting for him to stab the Simon Cowell to death. Like, I thought that's where they were going to go, and that's the whole reason that he didn't do his compliance stuff. But on the other hand, like I said, it was kind of interesting that that's the frustrating thing about this episode. None of the choices weren't interesting.
Okay.
It's just the choices are interesting, but what came out of the choices seemed like the least interesting outcome of that interesting choice. Like him not taking the compliance, super interesting, and it generates some real drama and tension in his performance. Him with the shard of glass, but then that doesn't really go anywhere.
Yeah.
So I don't know. Like I said, it's interesting, and it looked great. It has a lot of interesting concepts and ideas, but ultimately I think it sags a bit under its own weight.
All right. We are back for episode 3.
The final.
Yeah, the season finale. I like the short British series, I gotta say. And I say series because that's what they call them. You know, seasons are series out there. I don't know why, but that's what they do.
Elevators are lifts. Water fountains are bubblers.
Yeah, trunks are boots.
People are muggles. Who can understand the
this
way?
This one's called The Entire History of You. And in my opinion, this is the best of the season. What do you think?
I think... I want to say by a mile, but that seems to like throw a lot of shade on the other episodes, which I thought were excellent as well.
Yeah, I mean, but I've been saying that.
It's certainly the most cinematic feeling.
It's the most cohesive. It's the most grounded. I think it's the most engaging story yet.
It tells a story, and it doesn't go off into G.I. Joe and He-Man moral lessons. Although it does have a twist that I wasn't sure how I felt about, but I couldn't deny the art of it for sure.
Okay. And it's kind of a look at how, you know, a single piece of technology might change our lives, which to me is super interesting.
Sure. I've got so much to talk about, I'm not even sure where to begin. Maybe the first thing that pops in my head is, I remember during our Snowden podcast, I made the statement that if we ever got to a point, like maybe instead of trying to hold on to our privacy in an ever increasingly technologically hostile environment to do so, maybe the answer is just radical transparency. Like if everyone knew what everyone was doing at all the times, we would all realize that we're not so weird after all, and we would get over this shit. And, you know, if people need help, we can get people the help they need, and the world would be a better place. And I'm not even sure that this episode dissuaded me from that.
Uh-huh.
Because this is just like the first, like, no doubt there will be a lot of friction and fighting when this technology first deployed. But I thought, like, some of this shit was amazing. The ability to go back and say, how bad was that interchange that I just had with somebody? Who actually is right? Who made the promise and didn't keep it? Like, being able to do that and quickly sort the fact that, like, you know, I'm an asshole or you're an asshole or maybe we're all assholes from time to time and move on, I think would be a net good for society.
Okay.
And maybe
that is one of the questions that came up during my watch. I was thinking, you know, is it better to be able to overanalyze everything and have perfect recall of it? Or is fuzzy memory sometimes a good thing? Does it allow you to live your life when maybe the weight of the decisions you've made in the past might stack up on you and cause you more and more grief? You know, because a lot of people make a lot of bad decisions, and I don't think that would go away. I think you would just be reminded of them constantly.
I feel like
I've... And torturously. And I mean, that's what the end of this episode is, right?
Sure.
He's made a terrible decision, and now he has to live with it, and he can't, and he gouges himself.
Has he made a terrible decision?
I think he has, yeah. In my opinion.
Okay.
I mean, he's thrown away a family that, yeah, I mean, this kid, maybe not his. It's not super clear, but I think that's what it's implying, that the kid is not his. But he's going back over all the memories he's had in this house and of the child and of his wife. And, yeah, I think he's sad about it.
Oh, I agree.
And tortured by...
You'd be sad when a relationship ends, but I'm not so sure that the relationship shouldn't end.
Okay.
That's something we can talk about, another vector. I don't want
to
breeze past this one too much because...
Me either.
While I was watching this guy rewind and see how he did with his interview with his bosses and how he did, I'm thinking like, wow, I'm already an early adopter for this technology because I feel like, I'm not alone, that I tend to replay my failures a lot more than my successes.
Okay.
And I had the sinking suspicion that I put a little negative spin. Like, I always perform worse in the situations, the other people always perform better, and that I'm a much bigger, that everyone, not only am I a much bigger asshole, but everyone is noticing that I'm an asshole. And I feel like a lot of that stuff is just not true. And if you could go back and actually see it, then, you know, maybe it would dispel. And sure, you'd have to learn coping mechanisms for not dwelling on the past.
Right.
But I think, I don't know, my suspicion is after several generations of that, we'd all be more honest and open and trustworthy and mentally healthy people if we had this technology. Like, gaslighting someone would be impossible.
Sure.
Like that kind of emotional manipulative abuse would just be impossible with this kind of technology.
Yeah, I mean, I did want to talk about how the episode kind of portrays the changes in society because of this thing. And what we think might actually happen with something like this.
Right.
Because the episode, I mean, it very much says, like, a lot of things about the world they live in. And when it starts, the first question that's asked is, are you cool with suing people for bad parenting retroactively? Like, that doesn't really come up so often unless you can, like, prove it, right? And these devices would allow you to prove it. Like, their baby has one of these things. So if they were abusive or if they had done, you know, things to disadvantage this child, I could see, like, a cottage industry popping up because of that.
And that's, like, abuse, sure, but like playing back a parent's late night decision about whether to send you to one boarding school or another and be like, see,
right.
if they'd send me to fucking Hogwarts instead of, you know.
Well, you're still not prescient. You still don't know how it would have gone.
But I guarantee goddamn that cottage industry would include frivolous lawsuits based on things like that, because who can say? Who can say if someone made one decision?
Or like, they fed me cheeseburgers instead of broccoli. Well, that's not right. That bad of parenting. Come on, man.
Yeah, I mean, it's not like, you know, it would be weird to be like, and that's the thing. I thought it was interesting how they handled people that opted out of the technology.
Yeah.
Like, you know, people are like, oh, this is some Orwellian thing crammed in their throat. It's like, it's interesting because it seemed like society accepted people that didn't have this technology, but there was this vague skepticism about, like, oh, I wonder.
What are you up to?
What are you wanting to hide? Why don't you want to review this? Like, we're all being open and honest. Why aren't you, like,
right.
It's more of a soft control than, like, a hard Orwellian Big Brother type of control.
Yeah. And I think it would actually be a massive competitive advantage. I mean, you're a lawyer and you're... that makes me wonder, like, this guy's a lawyer, right?
Yes.
What does the courtroom look like now? Because clearly, like, we don't allow cameras in all courtrooms.
Right.
But you would have to in this case. I mean, you can't gouge somebody or prevent them. I suppose you could prevent them from ever getting a grain.
I thought there was a feature of the grain that you can, like, tell it to not be recording.
Is that true?
I mean, you can certainly delete stuff, so I don't know why you couldn't, like, tell it to, or if it entered certain area. I mean, I don't, you're right. It seems like that's an easy technological problem to solve. Like, just have courtrooms be, you know, areas.
How would you know?
They're technology based, so I figured, like, if you built something to monitor them, that.
Oh, see, I would be way more uncomfortable with that, way more than just recording all the time.
Well, like, for example, would you be uncomfortable? Like, I've often thought, like, if I'm a movie theater and I wanted to do, like, the Alamo Drafthouse one step further of awesome, I would actually build all of my theaters have internal Faraday cages. So you step inside them and cell phones just do not work.
Right.
Because, you know. And then, you know, if you're like a doctor or a lawyer or someone called, then you just, that my theaters are not the place for you to go. My place is the place to go if you absolutely want to be certain that no one's going to be fucking taking a phone call or texting or all that stuff.
And you're not mission critical on call.
Right. And I've been a mission critical on call guy. So, like, I get it. Like, you know, that's them's the breaks, man. So
that's different because there isn't, like, active interference and connection to your device. Because, like, that's the thing that bothers me. If I had a backdoor in my phone where theaters could access my phone at any given time and make sure that I'm not recording.
When you're talking about something as private as, like, every experience in your life.
Exactly.
The
stakes are huge. I mean, they talk about this a little bit with the gouging, right? Like, there's this one woman at the party who got gouged, which is they went in, they pulled out her grain, and they're selling it on the black market, presumably, somewhere.
And it seemed like there's a creepy subtext that, like, maybe young, attractive women are the ones that are, because, like, think about perverts.
Yeah.
I want to see all your sexual experiences. I want to see you getting ready in front of the mirror. Like that's like a voyeur's fucking wet dream.
Absolutely.
So, like, that's like another way to be raped in the near future age. Yeah.
So it's also interesting, like, when I'm thinking about the society they must live in, it's got to be a huge crime deterrent, right? Massive crime deterrent. Because if anybody you're committing a crime against could just look at you and have you on record and prove that you did this thing, that's a huge deterrent. However, crime still exists because gouging exists, and gouging is presumably a crime.
It's also going to be a crime aggravator. Like if you catch someone robbing you. It seems like what they should do is probably kill you and certainly take your grain.
Right.
So, like, you know, a smash and grab turns into a homicide memory theft.
Right.
On top of it. So, yeah, I think it's a deterrent.
Crimes that actually happen get worse, but less crime happens overall.
Yeah. And I don't know if that's a trade-off society wants to make.
Yeah, I don't know. It does seem like, you know, there is a possibility of just getting through a gouging, like they say, because she does. And apparently there's a chance of it making you blind, which I think is what happens at the end of this episode.
Why do you say that?
Because the screen goes black, but I know it's going to credits, but I think what happens here is at the end he gouges this grain out and he does it so sloppily that he blinds himself.
Oh, see, I never even... They do mention that as a risk when talking about gouging, like, don't they?
Yeah, very briefly.
Because I just like, got it as
like... Oh, you still can see. That's amazing or whatever. And then they move on.
Well, maybe that's like a... Like, okay. Because I took that as like... that's a prejudice. Like, you know, oh, if you gouge it, your eyes will fall. You know, your optic nerve won't work anymore or something like that.
Oh, like it's a folk tale or a legend.
Yeah, kind of like when myth. You hear about people with certain diseases or whatever, then you meet them and it's like, you know, not what you think or...
Yeah, yeah. Maybe it is.
But
maybe
you're right. I mean, it did fade to black.
Yeah, and it's so connected with your optic nerve that...
You would have to be.
I would think there's a big risk there.
Although I don't know why it would, because my read on it was a combination of the grain storage system and like some sort of contact lens corneal implant. Because, right. like, your eyes glow white as if they're really, like, the backside of a screen when you're accessing your internal memories. Mm-hmm. So, and it's also...
And it's kind of like a two-stage thing?
It's,
like,
that's all
you
wall,
can do transparent or full image.
And it's a wall-eye vision, kind of like, so it's, like, almost like right. it's literally from your eyeball's perspective, not from your, like, brain's post-processing.
Uh-huh.
I don't know. I didn't think it was actually connected to the optic nerve. But clearly... It's connected to, well, I mean, I guess it doesn't have to be connected to the brain at all.
No, it wouldn't have to be.
If it's some kind of like lens implant, it's just that's your camera, and then you got a storage system, and it bypasses the brain altogether.
And probably there's got to be some audio in there somewhere. I mean, like a microphone
that's
and
true.
Speakers or, you know, some playback device for audio as well.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, it's super interesting because this is actually happening today, mm-hmm. and it's gonna happen. I mean, if you look at the VR, AR
like
stuff
Google
that
Glass
we're doing,
was the very first run, and everybody hated it,
right? Because it was bulky, it looked silly.
I think
there were a lot of problems, like etiquette wise.
That's what I'm saying. I don't think the biggest problem was how stupid it looked, although never helps. I think the biggest problem was people were just creeped out by the idea that. This dude is looking at me. He might be recording me.
Right. But get used to it, because that is going to happen.
Right.
And actually, you're recorded most of the time. You're outside in public.
That's what
anyway.
I'm saying. Yeah,
so,
right.
Like, this idea that, you know, you can, as long as people don't have the ability to look at you and record you, you're
mm-hmm.
good,
mm-hmm.
is completely fucked.
No, I agree. But also, I think, I've seen society's reaction to technology advances as very childish. Like, I'll return to fucking Bluetooth headsets.
Right.
I still use one to this day just to listen to podcasts when I'm running around in a store and whatnot. It's just a little unobtrusive thing I stick in my ear. It's like barely even fits out of my canal. Mm-hmm. And like now I Westworld had this technician that used these like little earbuds. They're just earbuds.
Yeah.
Apparently those are real.
Oh, yeah.
Like, you can fucking get something that fits entirely inside your ear, they'll play music, and they last for, like, 4 to 6... I was blown away. I might have to be getting one of those, but they're pretty expensive.
Yeah.
But what I'm saying is, like, you know, you got a $30 device that allows you to hands-free communicate with people and listen to media and do all this stuff, and it was universally lampooned as either something inexplicably dorky or inexplicably douchey because people just didn't like the momentary confusion they got from someone having a conversation... With no, no obvious tells, like holding your hand to their side of the head. And that's just stupid.
Right.
Yeah, society just decided to wad that up and throw it away because I don't understand why. Because, like, cell phones are the same. Like, cell phones were the realm of douches when they were super expensive $3,000 things you can only fit in your Mercedes Benz.
Mm-hmm.
Everyone got over that shit as soon as everyone could have them. Fucking Bluetooth things were almost like the last one I got was $35. Anyone could have that if they wanted to, but instead that stayed the realm of the douche, and I don't get it.
Well,
so this is going to be like 10 times harder to sell on people.
Oh yeah, for sure. And like I'm thinking, okay, well, if you know the Bluetooth headset, the earpiece headset sort of thing isn't acceptable, there's a way to make that acceptable, right? Like, nobody questions it when you're walking around with headphones on or earbuds in, right? Because they can see the cable.
Mm-hmm.
They know that you are not paying attention to them.
Mm-hmm.
And you might, in fact, be paying attention to something else entirely, and mm-hmm. probably are. So that's cool. And there's no confusion there. So with the headset, why don't we just make it something that's a little less confusing to people, right? It feels like it's on the marketers, like, make sure that you, like, have two of them in or something. So, that, like, you're turned to the side and someone can't see, then they don't get confused. But it would also probably need something like that to indicate, hey, I am recording, or hey, this is what's happening right now. Because otherwise, yeah, people are going to be confused and or alternatively pissed. Like,
yeah, but eventually we'll have to move past that, because like that's one of the things Google Glass, they had like a red LED that when it was recorded.
Right.
One of the first things you could hack was to turn that off.
Well, sure.
So I think that in my mind, people just need to get used to the idea that they're going to be under constant surveillance, because...
right, but telling somebody just get used to it is not a solution, right?
Well, I agree.
Like, taking baby steps toward that.
Yeah. I'm not readying this for public policy. I'm just speaking
sure,
out loud.
Sure.
Because you're right. Anytime politically you're like, just fucking get used to it. This is the new world order, baby.
Yeah.
That then you get fucking...
You entrench people even more.
Yeah, you get a reality star elected to president.
Right.
What I'm saying is more like they have to get used to it, because if they have like some kind of obvious like the, you know, recording light or someone's eyes glow red, I guarantee someone will be able to figure out how to turn that off.
Right.
And then you'll be right back to where you started from. It's like, and that'll be what's covered by the news. Like, oh, perverts have turned off the red glowing eyes of, you know, the pervocity and all skepticism about this new technology. So I'm like,
eyes of pervocity. That's what the device will be called.
That's what the 60-minute segment on the device will be called.
I just say call the device. I just got eyes of pervocity put in.
Yeah, right, man. Yeah.
Because you know that's totally, all anybody's using it for.
Right.
It's pervy things.
It's totally changed, man, because now it's like you just don't realize how many people are just having sex in your view.
Right.
And so you can analyze frame by frame in high definition every window you pass. And
you should see what goes on in the bus.
It's a smorgasbord. the parks alone.
Yep.
But I don't know how you would market that to people, but like essentially get used to it. It's not going away has got to be a component of that campaign, because I do think it's true.
I agree. I do think it's true as well. We're headed toward that future.
And I don't know, like people, it seems like there's like people that don't like and want to bemoan every single thing, like, oh, radios, no one goes out and no one reads books or talks to anyone anymore, and television, no one read books or listens to radio programs or goes out and talk to anyone anymore, the internet, no one watches television or read books or listens to radio shows or goes out and talk to anyone anymore.
It's just how it goes.
Yeah, man, like it's the direction of progress is pointing in one direction, and again, I do think there's a lot of compelling, It's a destabilizing technology, but the society that coalesces around it afterwards is going to be a better society.
Potentially, yeah. I mean, it seems like this solves a lot of problems with honesty and crime and, I don't know, just all the things that arise from our faulty memories.
Yeah.
And it's actually interesting that, you know, you say just get used to it, because I think we are getting used to it. And I don't think the people who didn't grow up with it are getting used to it. But the new generation, I mean, you got people who are taking selfies like 90% of their day.
Yeah.
They are going to be used to it. And in fact, they're going to love it.
They're
not worried one bit about being on camera at all times. Look at Twitch streaming, right? Like people who put themselves out there for 8 hours at a time every single day.
But here's what I'm saying about get used to it. Right now, there is these CD sites that essentially, you know, post pictures of really good looking people just out on the street or on the subway. Like you got the dads of Disney and you got the hot moms of the
dads
LA subway.
Of Disney?
No, that's a real thing. Like
what the fuck is
these
that?
People, like they take pictures of really attractive, like tattooed, hipstered, bearded looking, form fitting t-shirt kids who are playing with their kids as kind of like a form of porn for presumably women.
I'm gonna try I'm and sure get out some, there as a dad of Disney.
You actually dressed as you were, if you took a kid and threw it on your shoulder and Walker and Disney, you'd probably get a picture.
Puppy?
Probably, because the market, you know,
doggy
is fungible.
Dad of Disney.
Doggy's dads of Disney. But you know what I'm saying? Like, a lot of people don't know how to take that. Like, I'm just out here with my family, or I'm just running, and someone is downloading a picture and maybe jerking off to it.
Right.
And then you've got other stuff where it's like at the beach, and girls are wearing bikinis, and presumably they're fine being seen with that, but do they want millions of people looking at them. And that's what I'm talking about getting used to it. Like, is society going to say that, like, all attractive people lose control of the ability of maintaining the integrity of their own license? Like, if they're out in a public area, are they to be enjoyed? And if they're to be enjoyed, then does that include, you know, jerking off to those images and posting it? And if it's not, we decide that's a line too far. How do you prevent it with this technology? That's the kind of get used to it I'm talking about.
Right.
Because right now I'm comfortable saying, okay, these sites are run by perverts and whatnot. In a completely transparent, open society where we all are kind of honest about, hey, you know, you see an attractive person and you might think about them later in certain times. And everyone does it, and maybe that's okay, and it's not creepy because we can all talk about it.
It's okay because it's not concrete, right? It's not something that can be passed around. It's not something that, you know, is in full detail.
Sure.
Like, it's someone's fuzzy memory of what they saw.
Of what someone's
it's completely
body,
private
yeah.
to them. So, like,
yeah.
in that way, yeah, it's fine. Also, if we had the ability to stop that, if we had the ability to shut that down, would we? I think the answer is probably yes.
Well, it seems like there's a half.
But we don't, right? The innate ability of humans is to see things and remember them.
And what I think is, like, so the answer to that, there's like this other category called revenge porn, where guys sure. you know, take pictures of their girlfriends when they're naked and they do sexy stuff, and it happens a lot.
Yeah.
What's happening now is, like, when that shit goes bad and they break up, then guys are uploading all those pictures to revenge porn sites and be like, look at this fucking whore.
Right.
And it's just now starting to get legal attention where people are like, that's not right. That is illegal. That shit should be shut down.
Mm-hmm.
So if it takes that long to get so much notice, which I think is a blatant violation of someone's trust and privacy, then sure. I think that if we have the ability, even if we had the ability to shut those sites down, which I don't even know, because, like, if what happens if they're hosted in Russia or China right. or North Korea or Sealand or whatever, yeah. I don't know, because, like I said, it's like it seems like this technology, you just can't stop it. So the only thing to do is to evolve society's understanding of it. So, you know, the other thing is, like, maybe these sites wouldn't be so damaging if we didn't have this culture of slut shaming too.
Yeah, I was going to say, could it be social pressure that does that? Because it's totally not cool, in my opinion, for someone who, you know, maybe they saw me naked in the shower or whatever one time accidentally, and then they bring that up at a fucking party and say, oh yeah, I'm jerking to it all the time. That would not be cool.
Or just
that,
like,
would absolutely not be cool, and I would
I
would be angry about that. So right. there is, like, social pressure to not bring up those facts. Like, there would be social pressure not to show this shit on the TV screen at the party. Jonas, you know, he comes in and says, look, this guy's clearly not comfortable with this. Don't make him show it.
Right.
So maybe it would be a societal, like, peer pressure sort of thing that would help in that scenario.
It could, but I think eventually the peer pressure would be, like, it seems like society always goes towards the least resistance, which seems to be a coarser, like, 100 years ago, most people would be horrified by the way I speak, right? Unless you were in, like, the British fucking Navy or a band of pirates, being able to just speak the way I speak in normal everyday would be seen as, like, terrible. 100 years later, it's like maybe outside the bell curve, but, like, not eyebrow raising to be dropping F-bombs or stuff in mixed company. I wonder, though. So I'm saying is, like, yes, I think there would be social pressure to, like, not do that. But as the younger generations come up and they see that as, like, oh, that's unnecessarily fuddy-duddy. Oh, you're just being old-fashioned, Grandpa. Mm-hmm. So what if he whipped out my tits pictures at Thanksgiving dinner? You just don't know what the world's like. I feel like that it eventually would coalesce to where, like, whatever is possible is going to happen and people would just have to take it in good humor.
And, I mean, if they were cool with that, then it's fine.
But I'm saying, like, it doesn't matter whether people are – the people it seems like that – and if that's true, then you're relying on the majority of people not being cool with it. The second that the majority becomes cool with it
– but that's only to maintain the status quo. If everyone – if the majority of people are cool with showing their tit pics or dick pics at Thanksgiving dinner, then it's not a bad thing to do.
Well, but then – so, like, I'm saying, like, on – it's the most horrible point is when it's – 55-45
sure,
for
absolutely.
And against, because there's 45 people really uncomfortable having their tits or their dick shown during Thanksgiving, and yet they're being told, get over it, you know?
Sure.
But that's the way it always, I mean, that's the way it
It'll
works.
It'll have to go, yeah.
And I'm not saying, like, I'm not trying to...
I mean, we've done that in every aspect of culture and society.
And
so
I don't want to be construed as, like, the type of guy who's like, yeah, show me your tits, and I am entitled to them. I don't want people to think that, because I think that not only is that stuff not cool, it's illegal.
Sure.
However, I can see which way the wind is blowing in technology, and I wonder how long we will we can maintain that, and how long as a society we even will want to maintain that.
Yeah.
Because, like, 100 years ago, we wanted to maintain the ability for, you know, women to be covered up down from their wrists to their ankles.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, at some point, women themselves decided, we don't want this. So, I don't know. Like, 100 years from now, with this tech, if this technology is deployed today, what would the world look like?
Yeah, it would be a scary thing, I think, for
yeah,
a lot of people.
But I do think long-term, like, a society where you can fact-check anything yourself, and you can, you know, to the extent that an unexamined life is a life hardly lived, and an over-examined life is maybe not living, I think a properly... And
I think that's maybe what this is about.
A properly and accurately examined life is what our goal should all be, and this technology seems like it would help... healthy people do that.
Yeah, and I mean, Liam is clearly not healthy, right? I mean, he's got a chip on his shoulder. There's something... A lot of this is spurred on by his feeling that he has lost his job. He's angry, he's depressed, he's confused, and a lot of these things that he's picking up on only because of that. And ultimately, like... It's tough to say how much of this is Liam's problem and he should just deal with it or figure it out, or how much of this is the problem of his wife was not faithful to him, right? Because the thing that muddies the waters is they were broken up at the time.
Right. So...
And you don't know for sure that this child is not his. That's the other wrinkle. Like,
yeah.
If you could prove, so if you said, okay, they were together at the time and she banged Jonas, and this child is not his child, not Liam's child, then I'm 100% with the decision to break this off. Without those facts, it seems to me like he has made a bad decision here.
He's
let a moment of infidelity when they were broken up. Get in the way of an otherwise happy relationship.
I mean, this is a very Ross Rachel, we were on a break kind of situation. I don't know. So, and I try to look at this holistically, and Black Mirror, like, infuriatingly does, muddies the water in the last 5 minutes by making Liam right. Mm-hmm. Like, I would have no problem saying Liam is a flat-out lunatic,
right.
And I think he is a lunatic, because even if, like...
He's certainly a jealous person.
He's a jealous person, and I'm not. I don't have a jealous bone in my body, which drives some people crazy, but I think it's the healthy way to live. And to the extent that, like, I'm not completely not jealous, but if I got to the point where I was that suspicious of someone, I would just be like, okay, I'm going to level with you. I've gotten to a point where I can no longer trust that you're being faithful to me, and this is a toxic relationship, and it's making me into a person that I don't want to be, so we're going to break up. And I guess if the person, maybe I'd be making the most terrible mistake in the world. And in fact, this person's innocent, but the situation itself is so shady and so sketchy that everything in my gut is telling me that I need to listen to it. And I'm ready to bank on that. And I don't know, maybe they would offer evidence of their innocence, right? I don't know what would happen, but this abusive way of dragging it out of people and trying and I would never hire a private investigator to investigate someone that I love, because, like, at that point, like, you're just looking for confirmation of what your gut's already telling you, right?
You don't trust this person.
The
trust is gone. The relationship's
gone. That's no longer a relationship, right? And then, like, and the thing is, like, I try to look at this relationship holistically, but as you point out, we don't know enough. Like, she says, oh, well, you were gone for, what, 6 days, 4 days?
5 days, I think, yeah.
And I don't – oh, I bracketed it with fire. And I don't know where you were, and you never – so, like, obviously there was – other problems in the relationship.
Yeah.
And how deeply they go and how much this pattern of abuse was something that, you know, because it seemed like he is a fairly manipulative, abusive guy. It befuddled my ability to analyze who was right and who was wrong. But
sure,
it does
sure.
seem like I don't think he made a mistake because this was a terrible as written. This was a terrible all around relationship and they should be well shot of each other.
Right.
And, you know, whether the kid is his or the other guy's or whatnot is almost immaterial because that kid's going to be miserable in this suffocating, stifling household, I think.
Yeah, I mean, so how does this change, I guess, this equation and the outcome of this if Liam doesn't have this device, doesn't have the grain? Because ultimately it's all about him being, jealous and also able to analyze every single frame of video that he's got of her.
But that's what I'm saying. Like, I thought they muddied the waters by making him accurate. Like, this is classic paranoid. And then the other thing is the other woman, like, she's got his wife has a part to play here, too, because he gives her every opportunity to confess, and she continues to essentially gaslight the guy. Like, tell him that, no, you're wrong, or, oh, you're just being silly, or, oh, whatever, when she knows damn well not that he's onto something.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know, man. It's weird. Like I wanted to side with her because I see how awful this guy is being to her and like, you know, how shitty he's being to her ex-boyfriend and how,
right.
Well, like, and also
yeah,
he's
terrible.
One of my pet peeves when people just give themselves permission to be a fucking asshole. Mm-hmm. And when he's just sitting there down and he's just guzzling that drink, I'm like, you are just... You know that in your right mind you wouldn't be this kind of fucking asshole, so you're going to get yourself. It's almost like this weird meditated way, and I've seen people do it. I guess that's a definition of being self-destructive.
Sure.
Like, I'm going to pursue aggressively a course that's going to end in human misery. Why not? Just get blotto and go for it.
Yeah. No, it's I don't know. I mean, it's interesting because at the end, like, yeah, I think Liam is kind of an asshole, like, all around. Mm-hmm. You know, he's jealous, he's a dick, he's passive-aggressive, he doesn't say what he thinks. But at the end, you can't help but feel a little bit of sympathy for him because, A, he's right, and B, he has to live with all of these memories just replaying in his head over and over and over again. Now, I'm not actually sure why he doesn't just delete these fucking things.
Right.
Like, you don't have to tear this out. Maybe he's, you know, the reason I say he's probably missing this relationship and wishes that he hadn't made the choice that he made is because he does tear it out, which to me says, like, more than just, I need to get rid of these memories. Like, I fucking hate this device. This device has ruined my life.
But I would jump in and see, like, well, that's a factual error.
That's fine, device, but that's what he's thinking.
I totally agree. Okay. I mean, but that's – so I read that as, like, this is yet another in a long line of him casting blame where it doesn't belong.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I think that's the thing. Like, over several generations, people like Liam would be weeded out of the gene pool. Because
– What do you mean?
Either they would refuse to – like – what I think is interesting about manipulative, dangerous people like this is when they get – like if they find out they have a friend or relationship with a person that can accurately see what they're doing and call bullshit on it, they cut that person out of their life immediately.
Okay.
You know.
That seems a smart thing to do.
Like, and I can see a guy like – I can see couples in the future with Grain's argument where a person – A guy is saying, oh, no, you're just being silly. You're just – I never said that. And she's like, no, look here. It says it. And they, I can see a person saying – who are you going to believe, me or your grain?
Mm-hmm.
And like, I feel like in that future, if a person sees their own memories replayed, that person would be like, I'm going to believe my grain, get out, instead of being trapped in this toxic relationship. And I don't know, maybe guys like Liam would only get with other guys, girls such as himself, and they'd still breed more weaponized versions of terrible people. I don't know.
Maybe.
But it does seem like that kind of like passive aggressive, insincere, incapable of being honest and saying what you really believe type of person would get weeded out because the society wouldn't tolerate it.
Like
it seems like most of these people live on the fringes and are able to get away with it because everything is so compartmentalized inside people's heads.
Yeah, and I can't tell how far along this process of grainizing the population is, because it seems like there are still a lot of societal norms that kind of buck the grain, the features of the grain, right? Like, you can see the horrified look on her face when he's playing back all these memories of her. Like, this is not something that's cool and accepted in society. Like, I'm going to prove you wrong in an argument by replaying your exact words and shit.
Right.
She's not cool with that. And it doesn't seem like society has totally accepted that as just the norm.
I mean, the fact that it's still actively and aggressively being advertised tells me that this is in the first generation. That,
right.
You know, if this was multiple generations of everyone just like, you're going to get a grain unless you deliberately opt out of it.
The baby has one. And so that makes me think it's like second, third type generation.
I mean, so the other thing is like the other thing is we're only seeing very upper class people. Their houses were
right.
Fucking amazing. Yeah. And they all drove really
fancy
nice
sports
were,
cars.
Were driven by very, like, because it looked like self-driving cars were also a thing. And
right. And the guy who,
but they still had a drive.
Jonas, who had like this awesome old sports car,
yeah.
And that was probably expensive.
Yeah, but these all people all are super rich. So the fact that they're still advertising on television, and I don't know, I felt like this was like first, maybe early second generation.
Okay.
So certainly, it's something that not everybody is on board with, and
yeah.
And people like
yeah.
The first time that you try to do the whole she said he said he said she said, and then someone calls it up and says, oh yeah, well look, bing.
Mm-hmm.
That is going to be an uncomfortable moment, but
yeah.
It's probably a moment needs to happen.
Probably, yeah.
So,
I don't think we should remain in the dark when we have those abilities.
Yeah. Yeah,
that
and then we'll
reasonable.
Probably stop a whole lot of fights before they get started because,
sure.
You know, if you're not a complete dumbass, before you level an accusation at somebody, you'll go back and replay and make sure you actually have the correct understanding. I don't know.
Right. I mean, it depends. So it's on the people. I mean, the technology is going to be used by the people the way it's going to be used by the people. I mean, I could also see this accelerating arguments, you know, like, oh, fine, fuck you. You proved me wrong on that. Guess what? I'm gonna show you a moment where you were wrong. Like,
well, that's
oh, you know
like,
how many fucking times you've been wrong? Let me play them all back for
that's
you.
That's what I'm saying. Like
people are still angry and jealous and dick.
Sure.
And, they're going to use this technology in the way that angry, jealous dicks would.
I was just thinking of, like, if there's a person that every single imagined slight is bookmarked in every day. And
right.
The first time you said, hey, did you not pick up my dry clean? And they just play
yeah.
back 3 hours of every single time in the last year you've been a dick to them. That's, I mean, yeah, that's accurate information. But also, like, well, I haven't been bookmarking all the times you've pissed me off. So fuck me, I guess.
Right.
So I guess you can fight about how you use the technology.
Absolutely. And it would be a question of, like, how people are willing to use this and how people are comfortable using it. And I don't think it would just be as simple as everybody would say, well, you proved me wrong. Good on you. I doff my cap.
Oh, there'd be a whole lot of, well, you're taking me out of context, or
what
right. I was thinking when I said that and rolling my eyes and scoffing
yeah.
was that you're an amazing individual and that,
right.
I, you know, I mean.
So it feels like it would take much longer for the people to change how they use the technology than for the technology to change, like, specific things about our society, right? Like movie theaters.
Yeah.
Like you were talking about. There's no DRM. How are you going to stop someone who records everything they see from pirating your movie?
Right.
They go to the theater, they see it once, they have it forever. Done.
Yeah.
And they have the full experience of the theater.
Their head's not
going to
be on a tripod, but, you know.
Their head's not going to be on a tripod.
What I'm saying is like.
But from your perspective, I mean.
Oh, yeah.
What
like,
does it
but
matter?
I'm saying, like, I guess what I meant is, like, would I download someone's grain of someone going to see the new Star Wars? Because, like, I can do that right now.
Oh, I just mean, like, personal piracy.
Oh, okay.
Like, they have that copy forever.
Sure, sure.
They'd have to charge $200 per movie.
Right.
Because they get the DVD and the Blu-ray and the movie theater experience, like, all at once forever.
I just feel like, I don't know, some of that stuff seems like to have been solved by plussing the experience.
But if everything you see and hear is recorded,
right, But if I can have really awesome food and beverages and a super comfortable seat, and I mean, I don't know. Like, that's something I never really thought of. And the same thing with, like, concert. Like, if you went to go see a person in why would you ever follow the Dead or Fish when you can just go to one of the concerts and get baked and play it back again, and you're there?
Yeah, concerts.
In virtual reality.
Are a little different every time, I guess.
A little different.
But movies aren't.
And that's Brad Exam, because that's, like, these things that, like, they have big catalogs, and it's never the same set, but, like,
here's
a lot of...
Here's what you do. As a movie theater, you hire shills. You hire shills to go into the audience and talk, to go into the audience,
make it a bad movie experience,
and just
sure.
fiddle with rappers and just ruin the experience for them, so that they're constantly going to the theater searching for the best experience of this movie. So they can catalog it. That's how you combat it.
Yeah, that's interesting. And same thing with, like, books. You know, like, you read a book. And you've got, I mean, that's a really, like, imagine if I could just recall whatever I've read over my lifetime. I mean, it would take a little digging, like, okay, when did I read that book? That's the other thing is, like, Black Mirror continues to excel in depiction, realistic-ish depictions of this technology, because I don't know that you could as effortlessly surf through a lifetime of memories with this little key fob thing.
Right. I mean,
like, that thing was fucking amazing.
Seems like magic.
It does seem like magic, and maybe you could, but, like, I was just thinking, like, when did I fucking, like, if I want to see a quote from 1984, when's the last time I read 1984? That's a bad example, because I read that book about every year, but, like... if I want to read like Dune, I think I've only read Dune twice in my life, once in high school and once in young adulthood, and I couldn't tell you. And how am I going to find that if I want to find a particular page?
Right, there would need to be some sort of really good algorithmic solution for that.
Like, and I bet there would be, honestly.
But it's not depicted here. Like,
well,
we
have that technology. Like, if I had a page, if I said, hey, find me such and such a page of Dune, like, it would probably be connected to the internet. It would have all those text work, and it would just be a matter of ochering all the stuff I've got in my mind and indexing it and comparing it to just, like, facial recognition software.
Right.
Or, like, Amazon's got this creepy new technology where you just take your camera and you show it a box of something, not the UPC, just a fucking box, and it will find in its catalog what thing closest matches that.
Yeah, it's probably some kind of image.
Yeah,
like
I was using it. Like, my son thought it was really neat. He was making his Christmas list at Toys R Us, and he was just waving at stuff, and it was just acquiring all this shit. And I'm like, wow, that's crazy. But I guess those combinations of technologies would probably. I'm thinking of, like, you'd have to bookmark all this shit, but you wouldn't. It would just all be there and searchable.
Yeah.
Damn.
Yeah, you would. But it's not depicted in the episode, right?
No.
Clearly, what they're doing is remembering exactly when these things happened and scrolling to that point.
Right. So, would you get a grain?
Yes, I would.
I absolutely would.
If there were no, like, weird side effects or anything, because I would be concerned about
that on
a first-gen
device. I'm saying, like, if they were healthy and that they didn't, like, cause you to die in 10 years or something like that.
Right.
I think that, it wouldn't even be, like, if I could afford it, I would get it.
Would you be comfortable with everyone else having grains?
Yeah, because I think I would quickly lose patience with people that are using them incorrectly and just cut them out of my life. It's kind of like when I turned 30 and I had all this upheaval and I essentially restarted my friend circle from scratch. I read a lot of self-help books and I got myself mentally healthy, and I just kind of decided that, like, I'm not going to put up with people that cause drama. Life's already too hard enough for people that there's some people that just are not comfortable unless they're always dealing with some kind of crisis or always reconciling and making up. And, like, that's just exhausting to me. I'm not going to put up with it. So when someone does that, it's like, I'll tell them, like, you're doing this and I don't like it. And if they continue to disrespect that, then I don't break up with them unless it's, like, a girlfriend.
Right.
Because
that would cause more drama.
That would cause drama.
I give them exactly what they want.
They eventually will realize that, hey, oh, you know, Aaron's just drifted away, and, like, oh, he's always too busy for my shit and doesn't take my phone calls at 3 o'clock.
And then one day they
find
they're unfriended on Facebook, and it's game over.
There you go. And I've been so much happier just not putting up with people that let me down. And that's the thing. Like, I'm sure I let people down in ways, and they have unrealistic expectations. And maybe I have unrealistic expectations of some people, but, like, fuck it. It's my... Mm-hmm. if I let people down, they shouldn't be my friends, or they shouldn't be friends with me. If I'm not giving them what they need because of my unique mix of skill sets and emotional aptitude and whatnot, then why should they bash their head against my implacable wall? I mean,
yeah,
everyone would be just happier if like they identified what they need in a relationship and sought that rather than trying to pound everyone into a shape that they need, you know?
Sure. And realizes also maybe that that is sort of a fluid thing.
Yeah.
You know, it's not a constant thing throughout your entire life.
Yeah. You can't control anyone. You can only control what you do. So.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, maybe you could control people if you had the grain. Because that's the other thing about
it. I think people would try for damn sure.
The wireless hacking that would happen in these scenarios, in this scenario with the grain, is intense.
Oh,
I mean,
yeah.
There you would be constantly under threat of hack.
And I could see also very early on that like you'd have the jealous types like demanding when their mates get home, like, I want you to replay your entire day now.
Right. Like you saw the airport security, right?
Right.
Play me back the last 24 hours. Play me back the last week.
Right.
Like these redos are everywhere in society.
Sure.
It seems.
And that's like, you know, like what we... Yeah, we didn't even talk about that. I'm just talking about this from an interpersonal relationship, from a governmental oversight relationship.
Right.
But there I go. Like, if that is something that we could do to the power, I mean, that's a problem I guess I have now, because I feel like young people are too casual about their privacy and old people are maybe too protective about it. But the reality is we're getting comfortable with a surveillance society that's only going one way.
Mm-hmm.
Like, we the people are under constant surveillance and we're doing illegal things at any time they could decide to bust us and hoist us up and lynch us, but the powerful people are not getting surveilled at all. And I think for society to be fair, the telescope has to go and the microscope has to go both ways. And
sure.
I think this technology would let that happen.
Could let that happen, but I mean, who's to say the people in power would ever allow their grains to be investigated under any circumstance, right? I mean, that would be on the people to demand it.
Well, I mean, and I'm sure in a scandal, if there's some dude that's scandal ridden and he's saying, fuck it, you're never going to get my tax return, I mean, my grains, then I would hope that the people would be like, no, there's a fucking scandal and there's a bunch of shady shit. You either produce your grains and exonerate yourself or you get chucked out. Like, those are your two options.
Yeah, and that would be, you know, the other
because again,
thing here is you can delete it, though.
Well, so then that would be like,
it would be impossible to say that they deleted it for a specific reason.
No, but I feel like that's something that we already have to have this.
Sure.
Destruction of
evidence. We do.
Already, yeah. like as a private citizen, if I'm under active investigation and mm-hmm. I delete
right.
tax returns or emails or whatever, they actually use that as evidence of, like, even if that was just purely innocent, it can be used against me in a court of law to show malice.
Right.
But it seems like investigative, you know, like, oh, someone got beat up by a police officer. Let's see the dash cam footage. Oh, there was a malfunction that day.
Right.
And it's not treated as, like, evidence of malfeasance or malice. And that's the asymmetrical nature of this that I think needs to go away. And, you know, the other thing is, like, okay, so, like, oh, well, Aaron, you could be compelling an innocent man to reveal his deepest, darkest secrets in this society because you're giving him an ultimatum that he can either reveal them or he can get ousted. And I'm like, mm-hmm. so fucking what? You are not fully buying into the implications of this radically transparent society.
Mm-hmm.
Someone innocent revealing their deepest, darkest secrets will just be another Tuesday.
I get what you're saying, but yeah, I suppose I'm on the side of those people when I say, you know, it would be an extraordinarily difficult thing for people to adapt to.
I agree. And I'm not
our
saying...
Our society
yes.
and our culture and us as human beings, we are set up to not want this type of transparency.
Yeah. And I fully agree with that. And I don't want it either. I'm just putting my futurist hat on and saying, if it's coming, this is what I think would be the most fair and equitable way to do it. And these are the things
generations
I think...
and generations.
Oh,
it's
of
not,
course.
It's
of
not
course.
Something that we would adopt over a 10-year, 20-year period.
Yeah. Like... How long since the invention of the printing press did we get to 90th percentile literacy?
I don't know.
It's not like the print. It's not like the printing press came down. Oh, we printed a Holy Bible. Now every right. plowboy and whatever can read as well as a priest. Like that took generations too mm-hmm. before reading became seen as a valuable. Reading and writing became seen as valuable. Then penetrated. Like it took forever.
Yeah.
And now most societies have that over 90% literacy rate, which is awesome. So. Like, I think you can make an analogy to, like, a transparency rate. Like, early adopting is going to be, like, very fringes of people and, mm-hmm. like, maybe even celebrities making a point about, like, woo, my life's an open book. But then eventually you'll get to where, like, you get that critical threshold where people will start to be suspicious of people or see them as quaint. Like, I could see also, it's like, oh, well, maybe the Quakers don't have grains. Or not Quakers. The Amish don't have grains, but, you know, whatever. They're Amish.
Right.
It's weird, and you kind of gawk at them when you see them in public, but, you know, it's like, well, whatever, it's what they want to do.
Yeah, and I think we need those pockets of society. Like,
right.
Especially when something like this is introduced. Some respite from it when you've decided you don't want it.
Yeah, and there'll always be weirdos and outcasts that are seen as with suspicion, but that's like, at every point in time, there's always weirdos and outcasts that are seen as suspicious by society. So, like, that'll never go away, and those people won't get grains, and they'll just be... You know, weirdos that don't have grains, but...
Well, it's interesting because you may not have the choice, right? I mean, if you think about this baby that has this grain, it had no choice in whether or not it gets this grain.
But they can remove it when they're an adult.
Right.
And destroy it.
But you still have 18 years of...
If their parents are backing it up through the cloud, like, yeah, I don't know how that works.
I don't know how it would not be, honestly. Like, what kind of storage device do you have that doesn't back up? Because this whole thing is wireless, and I want to go back...
No, that's the thing. If you can... And that's... even if it's not, the truism... And that's why, like, you know, anti-piracy efforts are doomed to fail, because if you can see or hear something, you can make a copy of it.
Right.
So if this, like, if it was just eyeball technology, fine. But the second you can cast that to a screen and someone else can see it with their grain,
right.
or just record the camera, boom, it's over.
And this is super, this is a super big problem, I think, that would arise from this is the wireless hacking stuff. I mean, you would have people's grains hacked all the time because not only would it be a simple matter of getting proximity access to them, because we know that's a capability that the thing has, it's also an enormous payload. I mean, if you can get access to someone's grain, you have everything. You have passwords. You have credit card information.
Right.
You have – I mean, they're thinking small with the nudity stuff and the voyeurism.
That's true. Identity
theft. You have everything they've ever seen or heard.
Yeah.
And there's no hiding it. I mean,
you
would have to be
wireless?
So diligent in order to delete every bit of information that of personal information that comes across your grain.
Wouldn't the idea just not make it wireless and have wireless access? Like,
sure,
you have...
but that's not as depicted in the show. I'm just going with what's on screen here.
Why do you say that?
Because they can clearly send wireless images to television screens, and
but
they have wireless
they're...
communication with the handheld device. And
okay, so you're saying, oh. Because I guess what I was thinking is that you would have those two, that the grain and the remote would be irrevocably paired to each other, and maybe like some kind of biometric thing
mm-hmm.
that like if you gave it to someone else, they wouldn't be able to.
Oh, sure. Yeah, I agree with that.
Okay.
But that data has to be stored somewhere, and it's clearly able to be put on any screen.
I mean, the thing is like, I think that the gouging, you're right, that... So even if you say the wireless stuff is bunk, the gouging seems like, although you could, it just seems like you could encrypt that to where it just couldn't be broken in any kind of feasible lifetime.
Yeah, but they have to put it up on screens, right?
Uh-huh.
So there is a two-way street of communication here.
Huh.
Because there's data going in from the controller, there's data coming out to the TV.
All right.
I just don't know that you can totally secure that, and... People will find a way, especially with information that is this valuable.
Yeah. I mean, like I said, I think that this would be baby steps towards a society where everything is, like, radically transparent.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I mean, I don't know.
But
like,
some
where
things
does
you
that...
just can't be totally transparent with. I mean, if I put my credit card information out there, people are going to use it, right?
But, like, let's say, okay.
Let's
stop stuttering here for 30 seconds and see if I can put forth a coherent statement. So let's talk about intersection of all the things what we think is going on in the future. Let's talk about automation. Let's talk about the fact that probably 200 years from now, if we exist at all, we're all going to be some form of Star Trek communist.
Oh, I can't wait.
Okay. So you've got unlimited energy that you have access to. You have unlimited industrial capacity, and we stop having the concept of money.
Okay.
Why? What use is private information? Someone steals your credit card. What does that mean?
They can act like you. They can impersonate you.
But to what end?
To whatever end they like. I mean, I'm sure there will still be some kind of crimes, yes?
I guess, but I'm trying to think of, I guess...
Imagine how easy it would be to frame someone if you had that kind of information for crimes that they didn't commit.
But they also have, you'd have these grains recording everything so that you could exonerate yourself. Like, I have an alibi. I was here watching television. My wife was here watching television with me. I was...
And then you go to look and... Oops, that area of your grain has been deleted.
Well, I mean,
shit.
But I don't know. Maybe you go to a legal standard that there has to be hard physical evidence of something.
Right. Which is sort of what we have now. Kind of.
It's an imperfect form, though.
Yeah.
You go to the grains. If the grains all agree, then that's going to be probably 90% of your crime. If not, you start looking for, this person says is murdered, or all these grains deleted. Let's start looking at physical DNA evidence and going to town with it. I mean, I don't know. There are a lot of stuff where we're talking about violations of privacy. If everyone's privacy didn't, if it just was a non-existent thing.
Yeah, I suppose that would change, the legal system. That would change everything.
Wouldn't it also change people's nature of empathy? If, you knew everything about everyone and everyone knew everything about you, then, there would be no perfect paragons that you're comparing yourself against to. And there's no there's no motive to steal. I don't know. Like I said, I'm not saying that we'd ever move to a perfect society where no crime would ever happen, because obviously...
Right.
I can't even conceive of what a human society like that would look like. But it does seem like these things would...
Feels like it would be Brave New World, where everybody is, genetically modified and doped and...
No, totally. And that's the thing,
just cogs in a machine.
It's so weird because I feel like the utopia culture that started at the turn of last century, where everyone is trying, it came 100, 200 years too soon, and everyone soured on it. Communism obviously can't work because people are greedy, selfish assholes, and it's a zero-sum game, and someone's got to divide up the pie.
Right.
And if you let the person dividing up the pie select which pieces everyone gets, that's fucking fundamentally unfair.
Uh-huh.
You ask a kid to break a cookie to share with his friend, you let the friend choose which piece he gets.
Mm-hmm.
Kids learn really quick, they got to break that thing pretty fucking close to 50%, or they're going to screw themselves.
Right.
But before we had, if we move into a version of the future where life isn't a zero-sum game, where there's enough for everyone, that shit suddenly, you can have utopias. And, it'd be, I think maybe it's time for someone to write some really good utopian science fiction, to actually sit and wrestle with these things. And instead of saying where they could go wrong, maybe where they could go right. I don't know. Maybe the next 100 years will be a boon for utopian science fiction fantasies. I don't know.
Maybe so.
And also
the
still
trouble
find
with
where
that
there's
is,
drama. And,
yeah,
and
I was going to say the drama is missing from that, isn't it?
I guess, but I don't know.
When you examine it from the thesis of Westworld.
No, I'm saying I'm trying to think of what would diplomacy look like in a world where everyone has grains and everyone knows everyone. It's it's almost you just get up and here's how I see it. Oh, this is why you're wrong, because you missed this fact here. Oh, you're right. Sorry. I don't know. The whole world turns into Canadians. What?
I guess there would still be, debates. There would still be differences of opinion,
yeah,
and views that don't align with everyone else, and
right,
just because,
and there'll still be love, and there'll still be despair, and there'll still be tragedy, and death, and
right.
but how we deal with that, I think, would be an interesting. How do you deal with conflict when you remove dishonesty and treachery from the equation?
Right,
where it's okay, I've got grains. Nothing's wrong in my relationship, but my wife is dying of cancer. Mm-hmm. And I know what she thinks about that, and like, and she knows what I think about that, and like, what's that going to look like?
Yeah.
Or our kid died in a traffic accident. Like, there's all kinds of things that can still go wrong and provide conflict, but now you just have a story where everyone's a lot more empathetic and humane about dealing with it.
Right.
I don't know.
Well, I like to think the next, I don't know, Heinlein is out there and listening to this podcast and saying, you know what, that's a real good idea.
His last name's Leinhein.
The exact opposite, yeah. He's going to write up some utopian fiction.
Yeah, someone will get... it might be impossible. Maybe if... Because I'm always wanting to know what I'd do for the next NaNoWriMo if I ever had time in fucking November to do it.
Yeah.
That's a national... what is that?
Novel Writing Month.
National Novel Writing Month in November. That would be cool, like to like actually wrestle like what a utopian society would look like,
yeah,
and still be interesting.
Because
mm-hmm. like, you know, Star Trek Next Generation is a utopian society, but shit, seems like it's interesting as hell.
I feel like that's too hard of a project for a NaNoWriMo, because you spend most of your time thinking, not enough of your time writing.
Well, I mean, that's but you're allowed to take in notes. Like you can game plan your novel and like have like an outline and whatnot. And I don't know how, to what extent it's cheating. It's all self-policed anyway. We need grains. There's a lot of NaNoWriMo people that are cheating and gaming the system. If we had grains, yeah, we'd know it.
NaNoWriMo. Never the same after we got
the grains.
I want to
blow the lid off NaNoWriMo. That's going to be my first utopian work.
Then they do a no-grain NaNoWriMo. Yeah.
That's also known as easy mode.
All right. I think we've exhausted this topic.
Yeah.
I thought it was an excellent episode, and it shows both a frightening and... you know, a frightening depiction of how this stuff could be used, and also a lot of positive things about this potential technology that we're edging ever closer toward. Mm-hmm. So,
thank you, Kristen, for commissioning this podcast for your husband Chris for his Christmas present. It was a lot of fun. It's been on my to do list, and hilariously enough, like I went to start to go watch it, and Jim's like, "Oh, we got this Christmas thing," so I pumped the brakes because I don't know why, but I kind of wanted to give like my unvarnished first opinion of it, which might have been a disaster if it wasn't good, but it was. But shit, we got 2 hours of commentary out of it.
Yeah.
But I appreciate that. I hope you guys were satisfied with your Christmas present and everybody had fun listening to our thoughts about it. And also, you know, God, if you made it this far without watching the show, you should watch the show, because I think it's something that can make you mad, it can make you angry, it can make you sad, it can make you think.
And season 2 is also really, really good.
Yeah. And season 3, like, I've seen 3 of the episodes, and I thought they were actually better than the average of the first 2 episodes so far.
Yeah.
Anyway, thank you for that. If you'd like to commission your own podcast, you can't right now because our store is, like, in a disarray from us upgrading the software. Hopefully by the time you hear this, maybe that'll be fixed. If you go to baldmove.com/shop, you can make a selection of a bunch of different merch. Some of it is going to be... commissioned podcasts that I'm going to try to figure out a way to dump you at where you won't get lost because that's going to be interesting.
Just show them your grain. Go through it. Tutorial creation would be so easy.
Sure. But like I said, I know there's a lot of people been asking. I just wanted, this will probably be the first maybe commissioned podcast you hear. That's my top priority other than getting PayPal working with the new shop as well. So I'm hoping by the time you hear this, or certainly early in the new year, we'll get that resolved and get all that data copied over. But yeah, thank you for commissioning a podcast, and thank you for supporting Bald Move, and I hope you enjoyed it. Merry Christmas.